It's time for Mac Break Weekly. There's a lot to talk about. Of course, Apple spanks Facebook and Google, the Apple FaceTime bug. We'll take a look at Apple's quarterly results in beautiful, colorful charts with Jason Snell. He's here, along with Andy Iannocco and Alex Lindsay. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 647, recorded Tuesday, February 5th, 2019. The Emoji Curmudgeon. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hire qualified candidates the smart way and take your business to the next level. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com/IT to see what IT can be by giving their products a try for free. And by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at WordPress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about Apple's latest. And we have the six colors guy here. Did you bring your graphs?
I always have my charts and graphs.
You have charts and a pointer?
No, it's all on my iPad now. It's all digital.
Jason
charts, the
Snell is here. And
yeah,
you did. I loved your State of Apple article that you did last week.
Oh, the report card.
Yeah, the report card.
Cool.
And that was, I presume, followed up by, have you done your graphs for the Apple quarterly
results? Yes, I did that too, yeah. Of course. You got to do those.
Is that
right
an all-nighter for you?
Oh, no, that's, I've got it all scripted. I just put in the numbers and run an Apple script and it all, or a shortcut if I'm on iOS, and it just outputs all of them. See, there they are. They're,
highly, I think that's colorful. The report card.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's the report card.
I got a template. I can chart anything if I want to.
Please don't chart me. That's Andy Iannocco's chortle. Andy, of course, with WGBH Boston, Boston Public Radio, and at Iannocco.com, Iannocco.com. Soon to be, are you moving? Soon to be elsewhere? Did you say you were setting up another site, Andrew?
Yes, I did say that.
We'll leave it at that. Okay, fine.
I haven't announced anything yet because I'm still building stuff and I don't want another Fyre Festival situation on my hands. So.
You can buy tickets now. The entire Instagram community is turning green waiting for Andy's new website.
And you'll be able to buy things on the site using Andy Bucks. And most people are putting at least $2,000 into their Andy Bucks account. You know, so that they'll have the funds ready when we make things available for sale.
We were talking about the dueling Fyre Festival documentaries, one on Netflix and one on Amazon Prime. And that was one of the things they did to try to quickly raise money. Put some money in the wallet, please.
Our electronic wallet of happy fun bucks that you'll be only able to spend at Fyre Festival.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corp. Man, this is an embarrassment of riches today. Renee has the day off, and so we replaced him with Jason and Alex. Andy, you're outnumbered.
Well, that's true. But see, I have that sort of distance from the Apple campus that's necessary for rational thought.
Very clever. If you were in L.A. right now, you would see these, the Grammys are Sunday. You'd see these Memoji billboards going up featuring Grammy nominees all over Los Angeles. There's Kacey Musgraves. That's an interesting way to both promote the Grammys and Memojis. Apple, I presume, went to the artists to get permission to do these. It's kind of cool. One of them is upside down. I don't know who that is.
Someone right by when they finished it were like, oh, no.
It does kind of demonstrate that the Memojis look nothing like the person.
Well, it's kind of the anime version of the person.
Kind of.
You know.
Also, the Memoji version of me didn't have to shave a half hour ago. So that's not a downside.
Handy. Do you use, we were talking about this on iOS today. Anybody use Memojis still? No.
I don't. It was funny. I was thinking about this the other week. And I think Megan also was tweeting about it today or yesterday. And I noticed that it was because of the sound. I just want to be able to turn the sound off. Like if I when I was doing my kids, I just want to do expressions.
Yeah, she said that when you're smiling and you're not saying anything, you still get lip mouth sounds.
Well, you get lip mouth and you hear that whatever's going on in the train or whatever, but you just want to do something funny and send it. You just don't want to say anything about 90% of the time.
Stick your tongue out.
And literally one little button and I would use it all the time.
ASMR emoji.
ASMR.
But that's the that's the thing that bothers
so you
me most.
You can if you pose for an image, you can actually like drag it out like a sticker, and that works.
But I want to do the expression.
Yeah, you want to do the animation,
you know, like a wink or a some kind of funny expression. But then means I have to embed audio into it, which I don't want to do. And I feel like that. I think Apple will fix that.
Yeah,
because I think that probably. So. I don't think I'm the only one.
So this is going to get you going because there are three new Animoji characters in the beta that came out today, the 12.2 public beta. There's the shark with his soulless eyes.
Animoji shark.
I'm kind of surprised that Apple hasn't timed Animojis with movie releases. You know, with Pixar releases or
such
with
an
Avenger releases. There's such an opportunity
Snapchat
to have.
No, that, well, right? because they sure don't want a Pixar character like saying naughty things in a private chat.
Maybe not Pixar, but I do think that there would be. There's got to be
a Gilbert Gottfried emoji. That'd be okay.
I'm surprised that this is one of those features that's linked to iOS updates, right? Like, I'm constantly surprised at what they choose. Like, you know, we can't add new Animoji without doing an entire iOS update. And I can't decide whether that's just a decision that they made that they have to live with or whether it goes in the same bin as emoji updates, as like reasons people actually will update their phone. Mm. They're not going to update their phone for their security update necessarily, but they might do it to, you know, because of the FOMO of some new Animoji or new emoji.
And maybe there's a whole bunch of people that we don't know that are using Animojis every day, all day, and we just are missing out. We might be just too old.
There will in addition to the shark, there will be an owl, giraffe, and the one I'm most excited about, the warthog.
I will jump right back onto Animojis when I get
for
a,
5 seconds.
Oh. No. I'll use it all day when I get a honey badger.
Honey badger.
I'll be
getting all these messages from Alex saying, honey badger, don't care.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care.
Honey badgers are so 2018, Alex.
I don't care.
So here's what else is in 12.2. Do you use the beta, Jason? Anybody use the betas?
Not of these interim betas because I'm always worried they're going to trash my
phone. Me too.
In the summer of betas, yes.
I used to do the public beta, I think on the last phone I did, but I just decided I want stability. It's not worth it to me to know ahead of time.
Unless there's like a really major feature, which they very rarely roll out in these interim updates.
Because, Apple News in Canada.
Almost everybody is working on iOS 13 at this point at Apple, right?
So
this is the end of this.
New screen mirroring icon and control center, new full screen Apple TV remote control center interface. New speakers and TVs and home app settings, more detailed Apple Wallet UI.
Yeah, actually, the most interesting thing I think in there is this idea that just they made these announcements that they're going to do AirPlay support and HomeKit support in a bunch of TVs.
Right.
This beta enables TV control in control centers.
In the
home
app, you've
got speakers and TVs. So you can turn on the TV and change the volume of the TV and do all sorts of television set things that you previously couldn't do.
That's good because I keep forgetting I don't have to use my funky little Apple TV remote. I can use the one on the
You can use your watch.
The phone or even the watch.
Yeah, you can. And presumably, in addition to the phones that have been announced, people who do like plugins for HomeBridge, which is that great piece of software that makes anything a HomeKit device, I would imagine that they will jump on this for other smart TVs and try to bridge the gap so that you could do like on and off input control, volume control, stuff like that directly over HomeKit.
New privacy setting in Safari. You can turn off motion and orientation data.
That's really interesting.
There are companies using this information. It will break some apps if you turn it off. I don't know if it's off by default, but it is a setting in iOS settings in Safari.
Hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. There's in addition to like website tracking, there's also a paper from researchers at MIT. Demonstrating that it is possible to get a good guess as to what someone's unlock code is based on gyroscope data.
Wow, so, maybe that's it.
So,
wow,
it's an example of the holistic approach to security that Apple has, where I'm sure that they're aware of the real possibilities, but they're also like, there is no legitimate reason for most websites that are not involved in AR to have access to that data, so we're just going to block it by default.
That kind of makes sense, because that's why they did it in Safari, because you could, if you were malicious in Safari, pop up what looked like maybe the unlock code screen. And then watch the motion data, and if you were sophisticated enough, I guess, figure out what your unlock code was. So that's interesting.
Or at least how many digits.
Whereas an app, if you downloaded the app, it's less of an issue. I wonder, though, if they'll – is that – that's not a, currently a permissions in the apps, motions and orientation data, I don't think.
I think they just want to have control so that you – if you're a developer, you're going through the Apple rules and engagement as opposed to just anybody able to do it.
Safari will also warn now about websites that don't support HTTPS. This has been coming for a while on the desktop, of course, and that's a big big deal in terms of security.
Yeah. That the address bar is another big point of vulnerability. Google, for instance, is rolling out changes so that if someone types in like Amanon instead of Amazon's, you know, it's not going to take you to someone who bought that address thinking that, oh, someone's going to mistakenly type in this URL and maybe we can get their login credentials. And so there's a lot of changes afoot across a couple of different companies. They're trying to make the address bar a little bit more robust as a point of attack.
When will this come out? If they're doing public, it's a couple of weeks later or a month later or
anywhere from as short as a week I've seen, but okay. Mostly about a month.
Okay. And I presume iOS 13 is slated for the fall with release of new phones.
Yeah, I would imagine that they're starting to do their turnover now where they're going to start moving ahead. I've heard a couple of people talking. Somebody was talking about how there haven't been any updates to Shortcuts lately, which is an Apple app that's in the store. And that's, you just get the feeling that engineers are turning their attention to working on, because if you think about it, June is when they need to have a shippable public beta of iOS 13. So this is about the time when they all start switching over. And they might do bug fixes on the old version, but they're really all about the new versions that we're not going to see for 6 months, 5 months now.
Kind of a surprise that one of the things that Apple is allowing in iOS 12.2 is AT&T's 5GE designation. Now, I've seen a headline saying Apple approves of it. That doesn't mean they approve of it. They just mean they're not blocking it.
I'm not surprised at all, because I remember very distinctly getting 4G on my iPhone back in the day when it wasn't an LTE iPhone, because I happened to have near my house one of their upgraded 3G towers, and it said 4G. And still occasionally I see that when I am not in an LTE area, it says 4G, and I laugh and laugh, because that's AT&T's enhanced 3G that they called 4G. And I don't know whether Apple's policy is just to kind of go along with whatever their carriers are providing, and this is carrier branding, so they need to do it. But it's not new, because they did the same AT&T gimmick the last time AT&T decided to jump the gun and claim to be a G ahead.
So just to be clear, I saw the one headline that said Apple's endorsing it. It's not that they're endorsing it, they're just not prohibiting it, but I wouldn't expect them to prohibit it. The carriers are allowed to designate whatever they want, I presume, up there.
I mean, they could say no, although I don't know the details of their contract, whether they negotiated that in or not. But they did the work in iOS to enable that little 5GE whatever thing.
Which is ironic, because no iPhone supports 5G. In fact, no phone in existence currently supports 5G.
That's how AT&T gets you. They're like, no, we do. We totally do. We added a G. It's right here. What do you mean? What are you talking about?
It's the Nigel Tufnell approach to speed upgrades. Well, you know how like most phones are 4G, but we go 1G more.
Yeah.
According to Ars Technica, AT&T's 5GE stands for evolution.
Sure.
But it's really 4G LTE. Advanced LTE features, but they've been in the LTE spec for years, like 256K QAM, 4x4 MIMO.
It's literally what they did with 3G, where there was the most advanced 3G at the time, which was much faster than sort of your generic 3G, and they decided to brand that 4G, even though it wasn't 4G.
What I'd like to know is, with someone who has this 5GE is testing it, like, does it actually have better speeds? Because it actually may be two or three times faster than the current LTE. And it's in AT&T's best interest to make sure that it's faster.
Well, here's, say it's not enabling it. It's already there. It's already as fast as it is. It just doesn't say it. It doesn't, and the update will
show it. AT&T is the laggard here. Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint have all supported these standards for some time.
So they just
don't label it 5G.
Yes, exactly.
See, but AT&T said, well, we're going to go through all the trouble of putting this in. We might as well get something for it.
Mm-hmm. AT&T says, well, 5G evolution is our first step on the road to 5G.
Oh, boy.
Which is, and, you know, that road, the by longest the way, journeys is going to be a really long road. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean,
that's
road, right. The road to 5G is like a decade away.
AT&T says it's real 5G network. Will be available nationwide in early 2020, so it's a year off.
And by nationwide, we mean the center of cities.
About 12 cities.
Yeah. But across the nation, it will be 12 cities.
Oh, very important distinction.
Yeah, like
not, you know, everywhere in the nation.
Yeah. We'll have it in Boston. We'll have it in L.A.
It goes all the way
exactly.
Left to the right.
And a couple in between.
12 other cities.
Yeah, exactly. That's what
View,
nationwide
Cupertino. Yeah.
That map is going to be like red dots.
I just hope that doesn't poison people's idea of 5G, because if they think, oh, I've got this 5G phone, well, actually, it doesn't seem much faster than what I've got right now. Because we're talking about with real 5G, much, 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 much faster, and also much, much, much lower latency, which means that you could do things like a self-driving car that's not even necessarily self-driving. It could be piloted remotely by somebody almost just as accurately as somebody actually in the cockpit. So this 5G is interesting, A, because of all the infrastructure that's going to have to be built in to make it work, but also of all the new stuff that it's going to enable. So I hate for people to think, oh, why bother installing all this new infrastructure? Why bother all this new support if all I can do is I'm still getting 480p streaming video on Netflix because they still won't give me 4K on my phone.
So AT&T says their 5GE, which is, again, as we hasten to point out, is not 5G of any
kind. It's like crab with a K. It's not actually crab.
Is really LTE. It gets average speeds, they say, of about 40 megabits, although Open Signal's measurements last year said that AT&T's average 4G speed was 15, not 40. But even at 40, that's nowhere near the gigabit speeds 5G promises.
Okay. And we're not going to get gigabit speeds in 5G.
We're not
going
to see that.
Either.
Yeah.
My grumpy feelings about this being a marketing ploy by AT&T are tempered by the fact that 5G is also kind of a marketing ploy and not entirely real and not something that most consumers
Good
will
point.
Be affected by for a long time.
Yeah.
And so in the end, it's sort of like, you know, they all are trying to market stuff because they're trying to get churn in the industry and get people to believe that they've got the best network and planting seeds now that they can harvest later in a Super Bowl ad next year. And, you know, it's all the cellular industry. Like, at some point, there are no heroes here.
Well, but not only Verizon.
Have you seen Verizon's? This really annoys me. The Verizon ads that were on the Super Bowl. We love first responders, and they had the Chargers coach and all the people who saved his life. And as if, oh, but you know that time when we cut off firefighters' high speed access
in the middle of
the worst fire in California's history. That didn't really happen.
That was a big misunderstanding.
It was just a misunderstanding. Yeah. We never do it again, they said. But we love first
Somebody
responders. That just so when I see this and that, I just think these guys, just all of them, they're just all horrible people. Horrible people. This is the USA Today's headline. Verizon Super Bowl ads honor California's firefighters after throttling their data speeds.
Well, and I think that this is actually why T-Mobile has done so well, even though their
they
network.
They seem more honest, don't they?
Well, it's just that they're much more customer-centric. I mean, Verizon and AT&T have this, they're the incumbents, and they do all this crazy stuff. And T-Mobile does its own version of a lot
Although,
of those things.
John Ledger was not loath to don a maroon T-Mobile T-shirts and book the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. the day after they asked for the merger with Sprint. No. They were not above doing that.
I think what I like—
sitting in the lobby— T-Mobile.
See, what I like about him is that he's just open about it. He's like, there's no artifice there. He is just a shameless.
He does live streams of slow cooking.
Yeah.
Like he does Periscope.
That's exactly the kind of thing you would do if you wanted people to think you were a real person. You come down from your penthouse, you put on a t-shirt, your long-haired wig, and you do slow cooking.
But I think that what's interesting is that he is. And I think he's an imperfect solution for this, but I'm
a T-Mobile customer, I should say.
I think that he is an example, though, of where corporations are going to start having to go, where their CEOs, their leaders have to be a lot more personable, have to be a lot more connected.
They're lead singers.
Yeah, and they have to really be out there and actually, you know, they can't be completely separated. They can't be disconnected.
They hire a front man.
But they have to find somebody that's going to be that people connect to the company and connect to it, because right now what happens is with Twitter storms and everything else, you got to get ahead of it and stay ahead of it, and not get ahead of it like when it happens, but you have to spend years building trust with people.
No, they're doing it.
And that's going to come through authentic engagement. It's not going to come from, you know, another marketing campaign.
Speaking of which, what is T-Mobile Tuesday today? Is it tacos or socks?
Tacos.
It's tacos. You know, this was a very disappointing Super Bowl. Not merely in the
commercials were horrible.
The worst game ever. But commercials were not. Microsoft's was nice. It was heart. It touched your heart.
No.
Where were the Clydesdales? They were in there. They were, but they weren't great.
They used a drone and some special effects.
They had a dragon
fly around. That was my favorite ad. Was the Game of Thrones ad that murdered
that was
the entire
very
annoying
puzzling.
Bud Light ad campaign.
It was very puzzling.
Can you imagine the upper hand there? We're like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to kill everybody in your ad campaign. Are you okay with that? And Bud Light's like, sure, great, dragon, yeah, let's do it.
Was it an ad for Game of Thrones or was it an ad for beer?
It was an ad for Game of Thrones where the Bud Light people were like, you can use our stuff and we'll collaborate with you. But they were.
It wasn't a Bud
Light
ad.
HBO was searching for a partner they could do an ad like that for. And Bud Light apparently was okay with them. And then said, well, can you just injure the Bud Knight and not kill him? And they're like, no, that's non-negotiable. He's going to die.
I wonder if they went to Progressive and asked, like, can the dragon kill Flo? And they'd be like, no. We need her.
I would have dug that. Move along. That's interesting. I was very confused, as I'm sure everybody at home was.
Like, what is this commercial
think you're for? Watching a Bud Light commercial. Mm-hmm. It's got the Bud Light Knight.
Right.
And by the way, we've already seen 100 Bud Light commercials having to do with high fructose corn syrup for some reason. And then the Bud Light Knight, and he's jousting and he gets knocked off his horse, and then a dragon comes and fries him to a crisp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it says winter is coming or something. Game of Thrones, April 14th.
Yeah.
It's like, what did I was very confused. Maybe it's because I had a couple of Bud Lights before the ad. Mm. I don't know.
I like the one. I like the teaser for the new CBS Twilight Zone.
Yes,
where go to color bars, and then CBS Network has been knocked offline.
That was good.
It was cool. Not only was it appropriate, but later on, there's someone had like the memo that was absolutely sent with top priority to every technician in the CBS network, saying, "Warning: at 8 seconds into this commercial, you're going to see color bars and a chyron that says that CBS is off the air. Do not do anything. This is part of the commercial. Do not switch back to your local broadcasting because nothing is going to freak out this guy who's probably just like watching his sports bets on monitor 3. That's only holy crap.
There was a controversy. I'm trying to remember what company it was where they did a couple of seconds of dead air in the UK, and it really maybe it was a minute of dead air in the UK, and it really upset people because they thought, but something, and they went and banged on the TV, all sorts of stuff. So I when I saw this coming, I saw they quickly showed that it wasn't really here's the Bud Knight. He just got knocked down. This is kind of a surprise because we've been watching these commercials this whole time.
Yeah, I thought this was a clever reference to Game of Thrones, and it turns out no, it is actually Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I thought, oh, there's the Hound, right?
Yeah, that's the mountain, I think.
Oh, the mountain.
He tears his head off, the Bud Knight, and then the dragon comes and burns everybody to death. Your commercials are stupid.
You've been hijacked. Your commercial's been what?
And the Bud Light King dies horribly. Yes.
I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah.
Especially for people who hate that commercial.
I was unclear. Yeah, that's why Flo would
drink
been a good,
the imported beers and go, really?
What if you kind of get Flo? You know, she's lovely.
I want the pear mead with my nice mouthfeel. I want that. Okay, never mind.
We're from Northern California.
We're the people they're mocking.
I know.
Well, if they know people with good taste don't drink their beer already, so why not market to them?
Yeah.
right? Like, let's we admit it, which is what they do. So great. Good for them.
All right. Anything else to say about 12.2? Believe it or not, that's the conversation we're having right now.
Before there's only so much you can say about, oh, good, no micro updates to Apple TV, a device which you're probably not using.
Dude, we got 21 minutes out of it. I think we've done our
job
here today. So let's take a break. And there is still much to talk about. I'm not stretching. I have so much material. We've got the first quarter results. We could be. We got the quarterly results, and we got graphs. We've got the FaceTime, scuttlebutt. And we've got
Facebook,
Apple's new glass panel MacBook keyboards.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
What a bunch of winners.
Win a chicken dinner. But first, a word from ZipRecruiter, the best way to hire. And we know that right here because we use them. And it's always amazing when we go online with ZipRecruiter and place an ad, how fast we get great responses. And now I understand why. ZipRecruiter's smart. You know what's not smart? A job board that will send you 100 million resumes for candidates that just aren't qualified. What a waste of time to have to go through all of those. You know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak and hiring the right person. Of course, we've mentioned many times one post on ZipRecruiter goes to 100-plus job boards and all the social networks. But it's more than that. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates for you. That's why we immediately, within a few hours of posting, get really good candidates. It's powerful matching technology. Here's what they do. They go through thousands of resumes. They already have, actually, they're being, when they say thousands, they're being humble. It's millions of current resumes. They identify people with the right skills, education, and experience. We even got people local. Like we said, we want them to be near here. And we got people from Petaluma. It's awesome. And then it goes to them and it says, this is a great job you should apply to. So you're going to get qualified candidates fast, often, within 24 hours. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. That's from Trustpilot compared with other hiring sites. Over 1,000 reviews. Number one. Right now, you could try ZipRecruiter for free. You got to go to ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And I'm not kidding. You will get responses so fast and not junk. You'll only get the best. And, of course, the ZipRecruiter interface makes it very easy. You can have screening questions. You can have multiple choice or even essays and screen out people who just aren't right for the job. Without you even looking at them, they pre-format their resume so they all look, great and similar in the interface. They don't go to your inbox. They don't go to your phone number. They come right into that interface. You could screen them, rate them, and hire the right person fast. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Apple said, we're sorry about the FaceTime bug, and I love this, and we're going to give the kid the bug bounty.
Good for them.
Yeah. So this actually was this last week. It feels like this has
been. I think it broke on Tuesday.
Yeah. So at the time, we were kind of puzzled about this report that a mom and a 14-year-old had discovered it a week earlier. We weren't sure. In fact, I think we said something like, "Well, the Twitter account might be new. We don't know." It turns out, no, she's real. Grant Thompson and his mom found it a week before the security researchers did, a week before 9 to 5 Mac proved it. His mother tweeted Apple, and then I think later went to Apple support. Apple support, about January 22nd, directed them to file a radar bug report. And in order to do that, this is, by the way, I think we kind of, and everybody misreported that they said, no, you have to be a developer. No, they said, go fire a radar bug report, which is where bug reports get filed. It turns out, though, in order to do that, you have to register a developer account, which is not a huge. Do you have to pay?
If it's the
used to be $99, one, right? Yeah. Okay, so.
No, but that can't use the basic developer account for just getting
a lot of free things out.
I just don't know if you're just an Apple ID. But, yeah, it is. This is, the knee-jerk reaction of so many people at Apple is file a radar. And this is like,
well, that's
this
their
is
system.
A security. The problem is this is a security hole, right? They should not get tossed in radar. Anybody who's used radar, Apple's bug reporter, knows that at least from the outside, it appears to be a black hole where bug reports. I thought you were going to say, Leo, where bug reports go to die, because that's kind of what happens with so many things filed to radar. And it
I hear this complaint, though. We've had exactly the same complaint about Microsoft. Remember, there was a terrible Windows bug that deleted data. And Microsoft apparently knew about it for months. Or, well, it had been reported for months, but Microsoft paid
no attention. Yeah, but like a zero-day security exploit that lets you listen in or see people in their homes feels like a little bit of an escalation.
Yeah.
But when you have a confirmation that somebody at Apple actually saw this report that this person tried to file, it seems like the first thing you do is, gosh, I work at Apple. I have access to an iPhone. I should try it right here. And then file your own bug report when you find out that, oh, dear, this is real. Did Tim Cook directly post on Friday one of the Mac blogs about, okay, it looks like we're not going to have our fix this week like we promised, but it's going to be here next week. And by the way, since I got your ear, I do understand that this should have been escalated much more quickly. Now we're going to be looking at our process for receiving these bugs and escalating it.
Yeah, they apologized.
They did acknowledge that, we should not have. They told us we didn't do anything, and that's a problem that we should fix.
So the mom, Michelle Thompson, says that on Friday, an unnamed Apple executive flew out to see them in Tucson, and he may in fact get Apple's bug bounty, which could be something like $25,000.
No, it's good. I think, look, this is troubling because this was a huge issue and with a lot of fallout and seemed to just fall through the cracks. At the same time, I do think, and you know, again, I'm trying to say this is a big thing, we don't understand, I think, most of us, the scale of one of these big companies in terms of what comes in over the transom. Like, it's not like there's a person sitting at a desk with a telephone waiting for it to ring, and then suddenly a kid from Tucson calls and like,
Apple
finally,
yeah,
somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
It's more like just thousands
every
of
day.
Calls, and it's
every
mostly
day.
Garbage, right? It's like 99.9% of it is not.
I can't figure out how to turn off my Wi-Fi.
Right, like 2% of it's bugs, and 0.01% of it is actual legit security issues. And the challenge is, how do you filter that out? And they failed. They totally failed here. And it's too bad because it is a brutal test of one of these big companies.
Well, and you have a lot of people out there answering those phone calls, and we can't expect every person that picks up the phone to treat it like an executive would. You know, like, you know, that every person that's handling customer support when you call is going to treat it as if Tim Cook would treat it when someone called and said there's a problem. I mean, they're dealing with, this is one of, as Jason said, a whole bunch of calls. Now,
and they literally may not know it's, you know, may not register how dangerous or bad this could be.
Right. And it is, I have a feeling this was probably connected to the group calling.
Yeah.
So group
I don't
calling,
think it was around until 12/1/3 or whatever it was came out.
October.
Yeah. And group calling is, I have a lot of experience with group calling.
He's the expert.
Group calling is super, super complex as far as how you manage everybody hearing everybody else, because it's all mixed minuses and it's all going back and forth and it's all dealing with multiple data rates. And that, so FaceTime, when they say, oh, we got up to 32 people in FaceTime, that is an incredible feat.
Yeah.
And I know that there is an enormous amount of attention that was spent on other group calling platforms to make sure that exactly what we saw there didn't happen. And that's all they talked about.
That actually is a legit question. Do you think that was a bug that should not have slipped through?
It's a bug that you don't think about until you do it once. I mean, it quietly happened.
You would have known? Is that what you're saying?
It happened in other platforms. It's just that we had issues where...
For those who don't know, what happened is if you added yourself to the group call with... Like, I call Alex, but I add myself, make it a group call. And then when the call comes in, I answer it on my second account. And it turns out that answers it on Alex's account, even though he has it picked up. And I can hear and see what's going on in Alex's
end. So, I mean, I think it's telling...
Until he picks up or hangs
it's
up.
It's telling that this is a feature that got delayed, which means it probably, because of QA problems, because of quality issues. And so you've got to wonder, did it get fully tested? Because it got delayed, was there pressure to put it out there? I don't want to undermine the complexity of these issues. At the same time, given what was required to duplicate this bug and knowing people who are software testers and QA engineers,
yeah.
like pushing the wrong button at the wrong time yeah. and adding yourself and all that, this is like software Bingo. Testing 101 stuff.
Oh, really?
So okay. I'm kind of shocked that this bug got caught.
Yeah, that's what really surprised me. That was not something that, if you have this special, if you put this special file in a special directory, it activates X. Or if you happen to have had it plugged into FireWire instead of Lightning, no, again, this is like the monkey scripts that you usually put together, or at least I was aware of people putting together, that's just monkeys pushing random buttons automatically, and then the app, the script reports back if something happened that was not anticipated. So that was very, very surprising to me. And also, I think I mentioned this last week when we were quickly talking about it, that this is why I think that you are inviting bad mojo on yourself when you buy a huge billboard saying that the iPhone is the bastion of security and privacy. Which is, again, this was an accident. Like Alex said, other platforms have had this problem. But when you're going to really slam dunk that point so hard, it really invites God to say, hey, wouldn't it be funny if we made this happen on all their phones? And everyone would talk about for an entire week?
I guess I would say, though, that I appreciate the fact that they did that, because it does raise the bar, and it means that they're going to have to play at a harder thing. And something like this looks particularly bad because of that. And I think right. that's good, because it means Apple's going to have to keep on moving down that path. I think their secrecy
And they acknowledged
is,
it, and they didn't try to deny it. They said, yeah. this is a problem we should have solved, and we are moving to solve it, as opposed to, I can't believe that you think this is a problem. I mean, this isn't a problem. Do you realize how few people were affected by this thing that you call a problem? So funny, you think it's a problem.
And I think that their secrecy is part of the problem too, because what happened is that, you know, for other platforms that are group calling, we would file two or three pretty rough bugs a week. And we would literally say, if you do it this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, this is what's going to come out. And it's because we were doing all these uncontrolled events, the guys that are testing it, you know, they get into a zone of, you click this and click this and click this. And then what we were doing was clicking a different order than they were. And when they're testing it, they get into this pattern of, this is how they do it. And until it goes out into the public, you don't think of another pattern. Like, you don't even think another pattern would be possible, you know,
I'm going to be in the rare position of defending Apple here. I'm usually on the other side. But bugs happen.
Yep.
Bugs slip through. Bugs are hard to get. Apple did respond. You know, and I also understand why Grant Thompson and Michelle Thompson's report was missed. I think once it became public, in a way that Apple had to pay attention to, they responded very quickly.
Yeah. I think shutting down group FaceTime was a big move, right? Because you're breaking a feature for a lot of people.
Big deal.
And it was absolutely the right thing to do.
Without hesitation.
And they did it. Yeah.
Grant, by the way, says he also feels the same way. He was on CNBC's Squawk Box. He said he'll still use Apple products. Every now and then something like this just falls through the cracks and can be found. He says, I believe Apple's still trying to protect user privacy. I love it that his mom said if he did get some bug bounty money for what he found, we'd certainly put it to good use for his college, because I think he's going to go far, hopefully. This is actually a field he was interested in before, and even more so now. He gets 25 grand. I think you've guaranteed this guy's going to be a security researcher when he, yeah. when he gets out of school.
For $25,000, he's not going to go very far in college. That's what?
That's a semester, unfortunately. Depends what school.
But. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that that Apple handled this as well as they could, given everything. I wish the way the story had gone is that they had found out and shut down Group FaceTime and released, and everybody's like, Group FaceTime is down. What's going on? And then they would say, we found a bug and we're fixing it. And in the meantime, it's going to be down for a week. And
every company wishes that. That's responsible disclosure.
Sure. And it just didn't work out this time.
Yeah.
What I really want is for Apple to, and I'm sure they're doing this, to look at every point of failure in this, because that's the thing that they need to get better is, like,
sure,
how did we fail to get this? What process was missing to get this report at all of these different points flagged as potentially enormous? Like, you know, did we not have enough QA resources to duplicate this? Did we shunt it into the wrong bin in our support or our bug reporter, right? Like, that, to me, It's the learning experience here, right? Like, because this is going to happen again. Something's going to come in off, probably comes in on the transom every, you know, few months, every few weeks. They need, and they failed here. They completely failed. So how do they learn from that and change their processes to be better? They're not going to be perfect, but they could at least make them better than they were this time.
Yep. New York Attorney General Letitia James and Governor Andrew Cuomo have announced their intent to investigate. Investigation doesn't mean prosecution.
I mean, these are politicians. This is publicity. Yeah. That is the most traditional and transparent, being a publicity hound that you could possibly do. I'm amazed that it's the governor and the attorney general. Usually it's the attorney generals who use this because they want to be governor. Right. And Andrew Cuomo is forgotten. He's already governor.
Yeah, exactly.
the lawsuit from the Texas from a lawyer in Texas is a little more interesting, because he's claiming that because of this bug, a private deposition was eavesdropped upon, which makes me think that how did you know that someone was eavesdropping on this? So unless this is a lawyer trying to make more money from suing Apple than he could have with the thing he was taking deposition on, I'd like to see exactly what he's actually saying happened.
Well, that's why I wasn't too perturbed about it, because you can't just listen indefinitely, right? I mean,
mighty long time.
Really? Yeah. If the person's phone is off and he doesn't hear notifications, he won't know that he's in a FaceTime call until later? Wouldn't you see that you were in a FaceTime call?
I don't know.
The impression that at best you might get 20 seconds. Because the face... Well, maybe not, though. If you're now in the call. Yeah, I guess.
The call has to be terminated.
I mean, I think the answer there is going to be that they'll do some discovery and find out if that actually happened. And if it did, I imagine Apple will probably have to pay them damages. The funny thing, well, it's not funny, I say that, is that so many of these bugs that are publicly disclosed are known, right? They're known, but not publicly. And the question is not, I mean, maybe there's something involving a deposition or something like that, but I think also the question is, are there state agents that were using this to spy on people? Because, you know, oftentimes it's known and all the spy agencies are using these kinds of approaches, and then they don't, you know, they don't want anyone to know.
It's not known by Apple. It's known by three-letter agencies who are damned if they're going to tell anybody.
Exactly. So that's scary, where you're listening to a political dissident or, you know, whoever, and you're spying on them against their knowledge.
I guess,
that's scary.
We're all sitting here with iPhones that could be in a FaceTime call right now. We wouldn't know, right?
You know, this is what I get when people say, I'm never going to have any of these assistants in my house.
You,
I don't want a microphone in my bedroom or something. It's like every device you own is a microphone and a camera. Right. Like every single one. And that's just... Be aware of it.
If you want security, you leave all the electronics at the door.
It's also why you imagine, with everything you imagine, what is the worst case, not even likely, but even outlying scenario? How bad is it, and how bad would it be to my life if I suddenly found out that I was my technology was exploited that way? And that is why I have a little tab of gaffer's tape blocking every single camera that's on my laptop and everything else, because this thing is like right next to my bed, and it's like in my living room, and it moves around with me. And normally it's there to prevent me from showing up in a group meeting unshaven and in a t-shirt that I slept in, because I didn't know this was going to be a video conference call.
That happens to me more than any of the other stuff.
Yeah.
That's the real danger.
But also because of situations like this, there is no way you can get around a piece of gaffer tape actually physically blocking the lens. And I think you might see an actual advertisable feature on laptops and other devices that no, there is an actual slide that covers the camera that you can turn on.
There's quite a few.
And here's a physical switch that electronically isolates the microphone circuitry from everything else.
Even Facebook's portal shipped with a crappy piece of plastic you could put over
the camera. I mean, even if you go all the way back to eyesight, you just turn the little bezel and it closed.
And not only that, but there would be an actual white dot, like the iris was actually white.
Closed,
so you could actually see, okay, I can actually change into my dinner clothes because I can see that I can see physically that there is no camera pointed at me that can actually show off my undies.
A little bit of a narcissistic point of view, though, that somebody might want to see you changing your clothes. Nobody.
No,
I don't,
no one wants
no,
to see
that's,
me.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know? Why would anybody want to know?
There are actual search engines for searching. Yeah. No, there are actual search engines that will find you. Open webcams.
Yep. I'd be flattered, to be honest.
Oh God! Don't put that in the show. That gets broadcast everywhere.
I just want everybody to know I do not put tape over any of the cameras. They're all wide open. So
we're gonna see if we get some press out of this.
What was that CEO with the private information locking? So hey, I put my actual my social security number on a billboard. Yeah. I dare you to try to go. Oh, damn,
oh, it didn't go well. It didn't go well. What a surprise! Hackers actually are pretty skilled. Apple spanked Facebook and Google this week. It turns out both Facebook and Google were using enterprise certificates, which a lot of companies use, by the way, to do internal applications on iPhones and Android devices. Those certificates allow people to bypass the Apple Store. Facebook and Google were both using it to get apps that essentially broke Apple's privacy policies by spying on the users of the app. Now, it was, of course, they were billed that way. And, in fact, users were paid for using the app. And at least with Facebook, the intent was pretty clear. It was aimed at 13 to 35-year-olds.
It's market research. They want to watch everything you do.
They want to know what kids are doing so they can buy that company.
Here's the issue.
There's a big difference between how each of them did it.
Well, and the
Facebook actually was nasty because they had an app, almost identical app called Lonavo.
Yeah.
Which
In the App Store,
and Apple yanked and
claimed to be a VPN privacy solution that was actually, in addition to being a VPN, it was a VPN through Facebook where Facebook got to look at all the data.
Right. Yep. And Apple spanked them at that time and pulled it off the App Store, and Facebook said, oh, we'll never do that again. Then it turns out that this new Facebook app was basically the same code.
Yes.
Rebranded. And so that's why I think Apple took this a little bit farther.
Well, and the enterprise certificate, the thing you need to know about it is that it is, as you said, the goal is you use it for your internal, your employees. And what both of these companies did, and the Google and Facebook stories are indeed different, but both of them were using it as a method to distribute apps to people who are outside their
company.
Facebook
still distributes its app in the Google store,
by the way.
It's still there.
Sure. So that was in violation of Apple's terms, which is, you know, the only way you get to bypass the App Store is if you agree it's only for your employees.
Right.
And they didn't do that. And in addition, they were using this to get around an App Store rejection. And that was when Apple turned off the certificate.
Which had a big impact. Nobody at Facebook knew it was for lunch. And
they couldn't call their bus.
They couldn't. The Google people couldn't get the bus. So there were apps that stopped working. In both cases, Apple restored access a day or two later. But it's a shot across the bow. A message is very clear. Don't mess with this.
Yeah, because I think that the conversation that happened after this is your enterprise apps. What happens if we turn off the other ones?
Uh-huh.
You know, like let's be clear. Like, don't do the, you know, and I think that the problem is number one is that by giving them all that data is that all their friends, it's not just their data. When you touch somebody and you give away all the communication that they're having, you're giving away the communication that they're having with their friends. And their friends did not agree to that. And
I do want to point out, though, this happens every single time you say, yes, download my contacts list.
Yes.
We were just talking about this on iOS today, the TikTok. First thing, you can't really even add people on TikTok until you give them your contacts, at which point you are giving up your friends.
And I go in, and if I'm going to use a Facebook login, which I don't use anymore, but I would always go in and turn it off. And if it wouldn't let me go in because I was turning off friends, I was like, I'm not going to play anymore. I don't want to play.
Well, also the other thing is that most people are thinking mostly about how, okay, well, Facebook is using this to scrape more information about individuals for advertising profiles. But we forget that it's not just that, but in Facebook's case, it's the ability to see all the other apps on the user's phone and how much time they're spending on each one of them. When the previous iteration of this app is one of the reasons why Facebook decided to buy WhatsApp, because they were able to see through this app that, my God, people are using this thing called WhatsApp that we've never heard of. Instead of the Facebook Messenger, this is good. We should buy out this company while we still can. And they're also doing.
It's not an accident that 5% of the users of this bad app, not Onavo, but the subsequent bad app, were our teenagers. Now Facebook says, yeah, but we got their parents' permission.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but which they have to do. You can't even do a study as a research group to do a study unless you have a signed document from parents saying you have my permission to get access to this information for my 14-year-old. And so Facebook, this is kind of like what I was mentioning earlier, but at least Apple, when they screwed up, they said, we screwed up. Here's how we screwed up. We're going to try not to screw up, and we're going to try to fix these things. Facebook's like, oh, but no, nobody under the age of 18 unless they had a signed document from their. And number one, they were actually being advertised without being told this was a Facebook research app. Number one,
The name of the app was Facebook Research App. So.
But no, because you could have a third party saying, here, we want to do research on Facebook. That was another defense that Facebook tried to make.
Another case.
How come you didn't know this was related to Facebook until you actually tried to sign up for this thing? But the other thing is that, we had signed things from everybody. But of course, as if they don't know that everyone who's writing about this story is then going to try to sign up for this. And well, guess what? I'm 14 years old. Click a checkbox. Great, you're in. do I have my parents' permission? Absolutely. Click checkbox and you're in.
I don't know if that is the case. So go ahead impugn them improperly. About this market research program are being ignored, according to Facebook. Despite early reports, there was nothing secret about this. It was literally called the Facebook Research App. Now, they say also it wasn't spying. All the people who signed up to participate went through a clear onboard process asking for their permission and were paid to participate. $20 a month in gift cards. Finally, less than 5% of the people who chose to participate were teens, all of them with signed, I don't know what that means, parental consent.
How'd you like to have the job of writing the apology/explanation blog posts?
I think it's a whole department.
It's a growth industry at Facebook.
I think it's a growing department.
I think, so when this story broke, I heard from a lot of people who were very cynical about what Apple's response would be. And they said, because there are, and I know a lot of,
here's my question.
I know a lot of App Store
developers.
Could
Apple have spanked them a little less hard, or did they?
I think Apple, I don't know the details. My guess is they probably could have just shut down this one app, and they did a little bit more. And I think Apple is trying to put a little daylight between bad actors within Facebook and the rest of the Facebook employees. And we've seen this where employees of some of these companies, Google included, but especially Facebook, have morale is down a little bit because of things that their company has done. It's certainly the case with Facebook. And how do you hit them where they live? Well, when you're a Facebook employee and some jerk in some group that is doing market research or spying or whatever you want to call it and got kicked out of the App Store and decided to use the enterprise certificate, they have caused you to not get your lunch or miss your bus or the app that you're testing stopped working for a couple of days. Wouldn't you be frustrated at the bad actors within your company? And I think that's part of what Apple's doing here, is trying to get some people at Facebook to be because I think Facebook obviously has this very, very laissez-faire attitude of enterprise certificate, use it for whatever, instead of saying, you guys can't screw up our enterprise certificate with your market research. And somebody didn't tell them and now everybody knows it.
Was used for internal testing of the Facebook app and Instagram
and
app.
It all broke.
And all of that
stopped for
2 days.
So if I'm a developer of one of those apps, pissed. I would be mad at those people within Facebook and the people who enabled them.
Because we have to remember again that these companies are sprawling.
They're not a monolith.
It's not like that Mark decided that he wanted to have this app activated in. It was some group that did that. It probably didn't even get up that high. It was someone who just worked. They're trying to get something
I'm
done.
Guessing this got up that high.
Oh, got that up when it happened.
I bet that Mark said, we really need to figure out what the kids are using and that we need to make an initiative to do this. That sounds like something.
Maybe.
That's got to be from the top. Maybe. Not for the it doesn't
market,
matter.
Never the market research is not—it's not a stupid thing to do. No. Although it's a Weasley way to do it with the VPN and saying
even think
that
it's that Onavo was Weasley because it didn't say it's a Facebook research app. But this isn't Weasley. This is very upfront. We want to know what you're up to. If you want $20 a month,
it's just that on iOS they couldn't do it without violating Apple's terms, and they decided they didn't care.
And that's
a big point.
And when they asked the kids about it. There was an interview, I think, on NPR where they were asking these kids. And the kids were like, well, they're looking at all of our data anyway. They were like, we figured we'd just get $20 of gift certificates. The kids, it wasn't like the kids felt like they were wronged. They were just kind of like, the people are looking at everything we do all the time. It doesn't matter.
It was really
matter.
Apple
we just
that
get
was
extra.
Wronged here. But Apple's doing, I think, the right thing in sending a signal to both Google and Facebook. You've got to adhere to our privacy policy.
Right.
And the fact that both these apps are still in the App Store on Android is very telling.
And I think this privacy, I mean, obviously this privacy war is going to continue, both from the government trying to get in, Apple trying to, you know, close it up, these guys trying to, people trying to maintain control over data or keep that data going, because there's just, you know, the whole internet runs on our data.
So there's a lot of app developers who assumed that Apple wouldn't do anything here, because they feel very much like small developers get the letter of the law, used to kick them out of the store for stupid reasons, and then they have to appeal, and that big developers do all sorts of things that are not allowed.
In a way, that's the case. If this had been an individual developer, Marco Arment had done this, it'd be bye-bye, kid.
All the apps would disappear from the App Store. Yeah, I think so. But I disagreed when my friends were like, oh, they're not going to do anything, because first off, politically, like, when will there be a better time to be seen as being in opposition to Facebook? When would there be a better time? Facebook is on the outs here. This is going to make you look good to do this. And yeah, it can be a slap on the wrist, which is what it is. And Facebook's going to have to take their lumps. They're really good at it. They've been taking their lumps the last 2 years.
It just turns out moving fast and breaking things eventually catches up. You know, I think that's the hard part that Facebook has to, you know, work through. Is that, you know,
I was just in some ways, Apple, the Facebook app on my Pixel, because I thought $20 a month.
Exactly. Well, in some ways, I think the hard part is that sometimes you feel like Apple moves so slowly to be careful that it's like, you know, it's this monolithic, you know, process.
Yeah, but as a customer, at the same time, who would you rather be with?
Well, yeah, exactly. It's just stability, you know, versus, you know, sometimes versus innovation.
Well, yeah, we're not going to get 5G on an iPhone until after many Android phones have it, presumably, right?
Right. Well, and even like when we get back to the group calling, Apple, you know, is going to eventually release group calling for all of us to use, but it's not something Google's been doing that for a long time, you know. But there was, you know, there was a lot of lumps in there's a lot of arrows in the back of the you know, out in the front there.
Okay, let's talk about glass panel keyboards. Then we'll take a break and we'll talk about quarterly results, and Jason will illustrate in color.
Oh boy!
In color. This is a report from Mac Rumors. Apple's exploring a new keyboard design to I hope they are.
It's patents. This is patents, though, right? What's the reality of it? Yeah. Last year we saw a patent where Apple said, what if the touch bar was the entire keyboard? And this patent is, okay, what if the touch bar was not the entire keyboard, but what if we still made it like a glass panel? My podcast co-host Mike Hurley made the joke yesterday. It's like, oh, you don't like dust in your keyboards, huh? What if no keyboard?
It's the conduction stovetop of keyboards.
Yeah,
right?
So the idea here is that it's a glass panel, but you can feel the keys, and they might actually move a little bit.
Molded in the shape of a keyboard. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the picture of Andy's face horrified.
Well, like, horrified. You can plot Apple's history with keyboards, right? Like, and this is the scary part is the question, all the controversy about the MacBook keyboard. The question is, did Apple look at that and say, oh, we went too far? Or did Apple say, aha, we did not go far enough?
Or did they decide a long time ago that they were going to this place and they just kept on making the keys thinner and thinner and thinner to train us on?
It could be, right? So that's the question, because I have no doubt there are people in Apple who are like, how can we reinvent the keyboard and eliminate travel and make it this completely new thing?
I have to admit, I'm fooled by my trackpad every time. It's not moving. It feels like it's moving because of the haptic engine. Could you do that with keys?
Possibly.
I know Andy and I won't be happy, but...
And I won't be happy either.
Oh,
and
you like a real clicky keyboard?
I like a real clicky keyboard.
My home keyboard is as much movement as possible.
And I do think that the lack of reliability in the MacBook keyboard, where a lot of people complain about dust getting it and all that, is competing with the lack of travel that is traditional in keyboards. And the question also is, does Apple not care about the one but cares a lot about the other?
Maybe I'm wrong and I don't talk to enough people, but that most people, surprisingly, like my wife, don't mind the lack of travel, but everybody who has a stuck key is going to mind that,
right? Well, and I think that may be the truth, is that we might complain about the lack of travel.
You're all writers, you're all banging
away
at the keys.
It's our instrument
also
of choice.
also defined as people who use keyboards.
Well,
I don't like it. I don't like it.
I shouldn't say never, but I have very, very rarely talked to somebody who said that I just switched to the new MacBook, and boy, that new keyboard is much better than the old one. If you give me the opportunity to buy a MacBook that had the old keyboard in it, I would say no, because I love this new one so much. It's better than I thought it would be. I guess I can live with it. Or the stuff that I'm getting with my new 2018 MacBook Pro is worth giving up a more comfortable keyboard. Really, and Jason makes, of course, the critical point that this is just a patent. But I'm amazed that they're even continuing to go down this path. This is definitely the Wile E. Coyote of human interface engineering, that if you just keep failing and failing and failing, just fix all the things that you keep failing at until this is one big 10-layer burrito of fail. Or you could just simply say, now let's see what the problem here, let's go on the whiteboard, is that we want a keyboard that feels natural, doesn't get broken, has resistance against dust. It looks like we're actually looking at the keyboard we had the first time 4 years ago.
Honestly, the
current keyboard is a pile of garbage as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't add any features that affect consumers. It's all for Apple. And so,
but I'm sitting next to two guys
choices
using iPad Pros with Apple's keyboard, which is not the greatest.
I prefer this to the MacBook keyboard by far.
What? Wow.
Like the idea that Apple and other tech companies say, you know, let's not just accept that the current whatever is good enough. Could we reinvent this? Could we make a better mousetrap here? And Apple clearly is trying that with the keyboard.
Well, and
the problem is, do they start believing their own PR and they're like, no, we've really reinvented the keyboard? And I think it's exacerbated by the fact that on a PC laptop, if you don't like the keyboard on one company's laptops, you can buy a different company's laptops. On MacBooks, there's only one manufacturer and there's only one keyboard now. There's only one keyboard, which means it really has to have broad appeal. And I do know people who like this keyboard, or at least profess to like it, but I also know a lot of people who hate it, and polarizing is not what you want in the only keyboard that is purchasable for an entire laptop line, and that's where
I just think it's incredible. You can't even buy an external keyboard made by Apple that doesn't have this cockamamie super flat design, and it's like that's where every joke that we've had to suffer since day one as Mac users about, you know, Apple they're all about style over substance. We said, no, it's not the Macintosh. It looks stylish, but it's also a very powerful computer. When it comes down to, again, an external keyboard that can be as big as anybody wants it, you don't have to put these crappy flat keys on it. But Apple decided to put these same crappy flat keys on it. That's style over substance. So that's everything that we've been making fun of for 10 years.
Yeah.
Well, and I do think as a creative professional, what those keys mean to us changes every app that we jump into. And I can see that as a, you know, I would be interested in something, not as my, what I write in, but as a, as if I'm jumping from editing to 3D to something else, having those keys actually change their display. Rather than, you know, a lot of us have had those little rubber things that you put over top of your keyboard that is like now your Final Cut keyboard or Cinema 4D keyboard or your Illustrator keyboard. But imagine them all changing, that entire interface changing every single time. And if you got rid of the ridges of the keys, I could see an argument of, well, I could just change the whole interface. Like I'm touching things. You know, I have little virtual dials, or I have, you know, something like that all kind of become part of that. I know that one of the things that we've built is stuff that integrates with two different touch screens. So you're one screen's controlling the other screen, and you're able to design that interface with a lot more freedom. I'm not saying that that's what I want for my day-to-day laptop, but I can see how a conversation around that could generate this idea of moving to a glass top.
See, that's the difference that I'm talking about. If you decided to, Intel's been trying to get manufacturers interested in that kind of a thing where you have two glass a notebook that's two glass panels, one of which can be a keyboard when it needs to be, the other, or could be just another touch surface if you need it to be. At least you're saying that, yes, we're taking away from you this beautiful natural feel mechanical keyboard, but we're also saying that when you're gaming, you can actually have a game controller there, or you can have a jog shuttle, or you can actually, when you want to read a comic book. You can have two pages of a book in front of you when you open it this way. This, what I always get kind of, what I think is a hard and fast rule is that if you take something away from me as a hardware manufacturer, you have to give me something back in its place. And if you're telling, if the answer to the question, why did you make this change, is that because we think stylishly it looks better, or because that allows us to save a manufacturing step and you're not making it cheaper for me to buy in return, that is not, don't make me solve an Apple problem. That sounds like an Apple problem. You solve it and you give me a real keyboard. You don't make me have to suffer because you don't want to make your baseboard 2 millimeters thicker, or you don't want to figure out a way to put a really good keyboard in the same space. And to what Jason said, again, I had a little bit of a scare a couple months ago, where there was a possibility that my MacBook Pro, my 2015, was broken. I knew it was just a SIM storage module that could just swap in and it'd be good. But if that didn't fix the problem, I was going to be screwed, because there's no way I could buy a new MacBook. And I knew exactly which model of Windows 10 notebook I would probably have to swap it with, in addition to buying a new couple of Mac Minis around the house to replace the function of the MacBook Pro. Instead of one machine that can do it all for me, which would be the MacBook Pro, the fact that this is a terrible keyboard that I don't like meant that I could switch over to a Lenovo Carbon X1, which has a magnificent keyboard that Apple hasn't been as good as for more than 5 years. I don't think these are choices that Apple would be making if they were actually competing for consumers, when they know that are we making a keyboard as good as the one we're replacing? It's a question of, I know it's not as nice as the one that we're replacing, but is it so bad that someone's going to switch from Mac to Windows?
But I think it's more than just switching. It's also, I mean, the same problem they're having with the phone is just upgrades, you know? And so, you know, how fast we upgrade. Like, I'm still hanging on to my 2015 because I really want my MagSafe. and inserting something into the USB-C is not enough. I travel a lot and I use that. The MagSafe is the thing. All the other stuff doesn't matter to me, but the MagSafe was like where the line was, and I haven't upgraded yet. And I think but that costs them money when I don't, you know, when I have, you know, I have 40 laptops, you know, within the company. You know, it's not like a, you know, us deciding we're not upgrading is not a trivial, you know, number when it comes to that, you know, and you know, because we don't want to give that up.
I still use the keyboard you recommended, Andy, years ago, DOS keyboard.
That's what I have.
iMac Pro. And on my other Macs, I'm using these Code keyboards from WASD, which I really like, and now I know they've added some colored key combinations, which I'm thinking.
I'm envious of Jason's little mini keyboard and its color combination.
Is that a Code? What is that? I like
this
clicky.
This is a Leopold. It's a clicky keyboard.
Clicky.
It's for later.
Probably cherry switches. We'll talk about it later.
Cherry brown.
We even can talk about the cherry colors. Yeah.
But it's funny that this iPad keyboard is using the butterfly switches.
Why do you like it more?
It has a different feel.
Is it more travel?
I think it's not. But it doesn't really have it.
I built a 20-page document in Pages with this.
I mean,
this
I don't love it.
To me,
it's fine.
It doesn't have the dead stop that the laptop keyboards have. It's got a little more give
little spring to it. Yeah. I mean,
although
everybody's different.
My MacBook Air, the new 2018 MacBook Air, is, to me, just enough above acceptable that I can use it.
I think their third generation keyboard is definitely better than the first two. I keep coming back to the fact that Apple's the solo vendor in its market, and as a result, you need to make a keyboard that's not polarizing. Yeah. It's got to be crowd-pleasing. Yeah. Everybody's got to find it okay. And what they did is they made a keyboard that I think a third of the people like, a third of the people don't care, and a third of the people hate. And that's a problem, because a third of your market can't buy a laptop keyboard like.
And most likely that third of the market are the power users that are really connected to you more than anyone else.
Because we all have opinions about keyboards, right? That's why they make a billion different keyboards. The problem is Apple is the single vendor, and you got to get the MacBook keyboard right. And it has to be right for as many people as possible, acceptable for as many people as possible.
But then I sometimes I wonder how important it is to them, because I know that my behavior at this point is that I go home and I work on my iMac, and I take my iPad Pro around, and I open up my laptop when there's just something weird that I can't quite connect. I haven't figured out how to connect to my iPad, but that's about it. I mean, it's just like, oh, compatibility with some file, or I have to open up, you know, do this thing, or I have to do a quick edit with Final Cut. But I think I don't know whether Apple looks at that as a trend or not, but I, you know, to me, there's my work at home and then there's my iPad for literally 95% of my time that I'm outside of my house.
I did. Somebody's reminding me. I bought an antique IBM Model M keyboard. And I haven't used it on anything yet. I have it. It's very loud.
Yeah,
it really feels good, but I just haven't found the right place to use it.
The only sensitivity I have with my clickety clack is when I'm on conference calls.
Oh, you
taking
can't
notes.
Use it, and I can't use them on the air.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because it's too. It sounds like I'm like booking airline reservations in between calls or something. Yeah. All right, let's take a little break. Six colors coming up, and we'll show you the one thing that Jason Snell could not do on his iPad.
Well, that's an esoteric one, but sure. Yeah,
I like it. It's actually the main reason I use BB Edit.
All right.
It's the main reason. Our show today brought to you by Atlassian. I'll tell you the reason we use Atlassian. We are an Atlassian house. We love Atlassian here at Twit. And we use it because it's a collaboration, a set of collaboration tools that help our team work together, but also stay connected to us and other members of the team, document what they do. It all starts, and everybody who's ever developed knows, if you're an Agile developer, you certainly know Atlassian's Jira, J-I-R-A. That's probably how you know Atlassian. But do you know they have many other tools? Not just for developers. Atlassian offers an affordable, reliable set of tools for teams of all sizes in many areas of the enterprise, from DevOps to Agile, from IT apps to Ops to ITSM and whatever's next. For instance, we use Jira kind of to keep track of issues and their resolution and who's responsible for it and all that. It's very good for that. We use Confluence, though, with Jira to document changes, document workflow. That's really important. Jira Ops, this is something relatively new. Ops Genie and Status Page that helps you detect incidents, coordinate response efforts to resolve issues faster, to keep customers or stakeholders updated. If you've got a code base, you sure know about Bitbucket, and if you don't, you better go find out about it. Atlassian forms the backbone of effective cross-team project planning, organization, and a communication, and your teams love using it. They can choose the tools that's right for their current framework while trusting that as you grow, Atlassian will grow with you. And of course, it all integrates with Jira and Confluence, so that way you know you don't have to move from platform to platform. Look at the companies, the best IT teams in the world that use Atlassian. We love Atlassian. You will love Atlassian. And the nice thing is you can try Atlassian because all of their apps are easy and free to try at Atlassian.com/IT. Atlassian.com/IT to find the tools that are right for your team. Atlassian.com/IT. This made my heart just go pit-a-pat when I saw this on sixcolors.com. BB Edits, fancy grep.
Let's talk about regular expressions. People love that. So I put together the Six Colors report card where I talked to 55 different people about how Apple did in 2018. And I had this moment where I realized I had to go back to my Mac to finish it, even though I was working on my iPad, because I do a lot of work on my iPad.
What was it that the iPad couldn't do? Because you do most of it on the iPad.
So it's a few things. There are some settings, numbers, has some features, especially in editing chart formatting, that you just can't do on the iPad version. You have to do it only on the Mac version. I didn't realize that, and I added a new data set, and I realized I want to turn this circle into a triangle or whatever, and it's like, nope, go back to your Mac for that, young son. Also, fonts. There are ways to install custom fonts on iPads. You can use third-party apps to do it. They get installed as like a font certificate. It's super weird. You can do it, but I didn't have them installed, and I had changed the font to my logo font, and I realized I didn't have it on my iPad, so I had to take all of the screenshots on my Mac. And then the big one was I had to do a lot of text processing, so I needed to flip around the attribution in my story, because somebody pointed out I was quoting people with their name at the end and then quoting somebody else with their name at the end, and people were getting confused about who said what. And I wrote a little regular expression that just flipped it around so that it quoted them with their name at the beginning. And
now, tell me the truth. Did you have to go to your regular expression reference?
I didn't.
You knew how to do that.
I know how to do that one.
That's
that one
impressive.
Is not too complicated. Mm. But there are apps that will do this on iOS, but I didn't have them, and my text editors of choice on iOS don't have that feature. And then the one that really got me is BBEdit has this sort lines command.
Love that,
where
too.
I was able to, I had a list of 55 names, and yeah. I needed it to be in alphabetical order by last name.
Yep.
And I was able to do that in BBEdit with the sort lines command.
With one command.
In like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And I, for the life of me, couldn't figure out how to do that on iOS.
I still use BBEdit, and I have to say, I keep that grep box checked all the time in my Find and Replace, because regular expressions are so powerful.
Yeah, you got to learn them. They look weird. You can't really detect them until you learn them. But once you learn them, it saves you so much time.
I frequently have situations where, every year our Christmas card list, I have to import it from a spreadsheet and munge it around until it looks like real addresses. And having that grep tool makes so much
Because literally here, I'm looking for a text in quotation marks followed by comma, close quote, said a name, period. And find that, and then it grabs and it flips them.
Yeah.
And I was able
That's
to go through
here.
In about 2 minutes yeah. and completely redo the entire 5,000 word story full
head.
Of quotes. It was
now,
great.
The only thing that would impress me more is if you use said, awk, and grep. On the command line.
That's too far for me. That's why I have BBEdit.
You know, I used to know how to do this and said, but I have probably lost that since I had BBEdit and I can do it now.
You know, this is the fourth or fifth time we put up that graphic. For the benefit of people who are just listening via podcast, you want to read out what that grep is just so they don't feel it left out?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, it is a quote mark followed by, what is it, period, asterisk, question mark,
parentheses. You got to put those in parentheses.
It is not human readable.
And then bracket, comma, question mark, backslash, dot,
once you learn it, you look and you say, oh, it's going to grab a bunch of text that's in quotes followed by a period, question mark, or comma, followed by a close quote, and then the word said, followed by a bunch of letters. And a period. Like once you learn it, you can recognize it.
The question mark makes it lazy, right?
Online.
So it doesn't have
BBEdit
to.
BBEdit is free to try from barebones.com.
He's got a pretty good
and
documentation.
And the BBEdit manual has a great chapter on how to use pattern matching with grep that will teach you almost everything you need to know.
Yeah.
So if people are curious about like processing their text and saving time and learning this stuff, you can get BBEdit for free to try it out. And you can learn it from the manual.
Basically, so you understand what's happening here. This is the quote is the first part. And this is the attribution is the second part. And what he does is he flips them. So backslash two is the second part.
Number two said number one.
And then that's that. And so he's just flipping them.
And I do a lot of that for things like, oh, I forgot. I want to put all of these names in boldface or something like that. And if there's a pattern, all the names are at the beginning, followed by a colon, beginning of a paragraph, you can grab that and then put bold tags around it.
It seems obscure,
like
but the ability to do this is really great. Go ahead.
Not only that, but like it does seem obscure, and especially if you haven't done regular expressions before. But the thing is, it might take you 15, sometimes it might take me like 15 or 20 minutes to get the regular expression right, but that's balanced against what might have been like 2 hours on a long manuscript making the exact same change one at a time. And I would much rather, even if it were a half hour of getting the reg right, at least that is interesting, intellectually stimulating work. Whereas when you're just doing it one at a time, looking at search, replace, search, replace, search, replace,
imagine
you get so numb that you will miss so many of them. And you
imagine going through this document, 5,000 word document, looking for every time somebody said name, and then select it and cut it. And then select inside the end of the quote and put a period instead of the comma, and then move to the beginning of the quote and paste it and change where the said is and put another comma. And also, not only is that super boring and you don't want to do that, you will make mistakes, right?
Yeah.
You will introduce mistakes, and it's just a waste of time. So once you learn pattern matching and grep, it will save you time. It's the best.
It
and
does feel pretty old fashioned. This
it is.
One of my favorite computer books of all time is Jeffrey Friedel's Mastering Regular Expressions. The first edition was about a quarter inch thick. I don't know if I have the second or third edition. I see he has a new edition. The one I have is about 3 inches thick. So suddenly he found a lot more to say about it. It is all on one subject, regular expressions. But if you know this, I don't know. Perl does it. Python does it. Yeah. Most languages
do it. It's portable to just about anywhere you go.
It's pretty.
I know it's nerdy, obscure. But it's like whenever we talk about on this show or on other tech podcasts about things like scripting and automation and stuff like that, there is a bar you have to clear, and it's a little scary. But I'd say if you're watching this show, you're listening to this podcast,
you're geeky enough.
You might. You're yeah. This enough. Is the stuff that like you put in an hour's work. And you have to find that hour, but you will get back like 50 hours or 100 hours.
That's how I got into coding was, I mean, admittedly, it was...
Grep?
No, it was Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh.
I was tired of rolling all the dice for non-player characters because they get killed so quickly. And so I just wrote a program. My first basic program was to generate the character from scratch. Like I just hit a button and then it just printed out. But pretty much my whole... programming and everything, even up until now when I use, you know, numbers to build stuff, it's I don't want to do this more than once. Right. Like if I do anything that looks like I'm going to do it repeatedly, I'm going to figure out how to get something to do it for
right.
me.
Right.
Yeah. No, my first dive into regex was every time like I had a comic book database and I needed to like change the output a little bit, I could either rebuild the entire database or I could just grep the text file, comma delimited, whatever text file I had into what I needed it to be for whatever Comic-Con I was going to next week. And it's just like you guys were all saying that it takes time to learn this, but you're not just when you do something manually, 1 hour of time is a total sunk and lost cost. When you spend 1 hour learning how to automate it, even if it would have taken you 1 hour, you've actually invested 1 hour's time into being able to do this in a half hour the next time, and then 15 minutes the next time. And then as these techniques start to really take hold of your brain, now it's like 30 seconds and people wonder why you keep taking early lunches.
I worked at a broadcast company, and my first job was as an intern to do you won, you know, and we send you a t-shirt, you know, like it was like you won. And everybody had done it for the last 5 years had typed that letter in, and I had typed that letter to them, and so the whole job, the whole internship job, was to type those letters and to send those shirts, and I just figured out a whole mail merge to not only grab the names and print it out, but also print the label and everything else. And so I took a job that took 6 hours a day, and it got into about a half an hour that I did it, and then that allowed me to learn Photoshop. You know, because there was nothing else to do. You know, they literally had no idea what to do with me because I looked for things, and then I finally learned Photoshop, I learned Quark, I learned Illustrator because there was nothing else to do for my internship.
I can't tell you how many nerds I know who have told me that same story, which is this job, it's going to take 8 hours, and then you're like, I'll be the judge of that. and within a pencils. Week, you have, I mean, the dark version of that is that they continue to pull down a paycheck for years doing 1 hour of work a week. Right. But the nice version of that is they're like, guys, I'm an intern. I'm going to leave at the end of the summer. Here's a tool. You can do this without ever hiring another intern, I guess, or having them do something more useful with their time.
Right, it's great.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I didn't know. I've ruined the show, Leo. I've made it all about regular expressions.
Oh, that didn't ruin it. As far as I'm concerned, that's a big improvement. But, unfortunately,
we have to move on. Oh, no.
We have to move on.
Alas.
Now, let me see if I can find your six colors. Because the most recent article is about this and using the Mac and BB Edit to put out your report card. Where are your...
Yeah, keep scrolling. Graphs. Keep scrolling down, and you'll
get. You gotta pin them to the top.
Look for the pie chart. Look for the
pin
pie chart.
Them
it's
to
blogs.
The top.
It's blogs,
man.
Leo. Blogs work where you put them at the top.
I always
and the bottom,
have to go through this.
You're right.
You post
I should probably
way the frick I should, too much.
It's there. It is.
There it is.
You gotta. Yeah. That's
by
it.
Category.
You got
iPhone 62%. Services 13%. That's telling, isn't
Services
it?
Services are growing. iPhone is there. This was the horrible quarter for Apple, right? The idea here is that they actually had to restate their earnings because it was a worse quarter for iPhone sales than they thought, mostly because of China, although not entirely. It was still their second biggest revenue quarter of all time, but only their third biggest iPhone revenue quarter of all time, which tells you something, that the rest of the business did really well, and the iPhone kind of hit an air pocket and did very poorly.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not $38.9 billion
well, that's
in revenue.
That's the four-quarter average, so you want
that's the rolling average.
You want the actual numbers.
Quarterly
$52
number.
Billion dollars they made on iPhones, right?
52.
I wish I had that problem.
And it's a $20 billion profit that quarter. Like, Apple does not need you to do a GoFundMe for them, right? It's not an issue, but it is, this is the holiday quarter. It's the biggest quarter. iPhone sales or iPhone revenue was down. There's no doubt about it. And it's going to be down next quarter.
You notice how peaky this is. And each of these peaks is the big quarter.
That's why I do that averaged chart.
Yeah, that makes it.
Because it takes out the seasonality.
But if you draw a line going from each of the big quarters, you see that 52 is actually worse than it's been for two big years.
Interesting parallel is it did go down the year after the iPhone 6 came out. And I'm starting to feel like this is just something we all need to acknowledge, which is every 3 or 4 years, Apple comes out with a completely new phone design.
This is an S year.
And there's huge pent-up demand.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time, they kind of don't. Also, Apple said the two biggest-selling phones last quarter were the XR and the XS Max, not the XS. And what do those two phones have in common? They weren't for sale last year. They're new, in a way. They are different in some way that maybe somebody's like, oh, I can see. I can get a bigger
10. The XS is basically a 10.
XS and the XR are, you know, inside they're a little different, but they look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people who want something new. And Apple always talks about that as part of the Chinese market, and that's true. But I think it's true more generally, like, oh, that phone is totally new. And last year they had that with the 10. And this year they don't have it as much. And so are we really surprised in an era where everybody's already got one and that the buying cycle is lengthening that people would look at that phone and be like, meh, you know, whatever.
It is telling that you had a 15% year-over-year drop in revenue.
And I will say that the 10 was a stunning jump forward from the 8. And that's the problem is that I went up, I mean, I'm on the show, I got a new phone, but if I wasn't on this show, I probably would not have bought a new phone, and I probably would have been just happy with my 10. I think that's their problem, is it was such a solid phone.
Right, and so that makes it even more cyclical, where like everybody rushed out who wanted a big iPhone and got that iPhone 6 Plus when it came out. They're like, oh my God, finally a big iPhone. But then that was it for a while, right? And the 10, I think there was a lot of pent-up demand. Everybody was really excited about the 10, but it's also a $1,000 phone. And the next year, you're like, I don't need another $1,000 phone. It's pretty much the same.
Right.
And the XR, I think, did pretty well because it is different. And it makes me wonder if the long-run strategy for Apple with iPhones is going to be to have the iPhone line kind of be a mix and have different ones kind of get different features year by year. So there's always something a little bit fresh and a little bit
that
different.
Would be smart if you want to sell more phones.
Think.
The problem is, what do you add that you don't already have?
Well, like the SE going away, I think there's an opportunity for them to do another kind of low-end and or small phone that doesn't currently exist in the product line. They could throw that in there.
You could do three cameras.
But the fact is, we don't live in the era where every year there's going to be a new smartphone that completely blows away all the smartphones of the year before.
It's
a much more boring, flat, incremental increase in smartphone tech. And that's where we are now. And all of us have to deal with it. All the phone makers have to deal with it. And what Apple gets, they lose all of that dramatic growth that Wall Street loved. What they get is this annuity, which is they're going to be making billions and billions of dollars on iPhones for the foreseeable future, and they can use that money to invest in whatever the next big thing is.
Exactly. And they have a lock on the most profitable customer base, arguably in the world, as a group. You know, like, so the thing is that there's an enormous amount of opportunity to continue to serve that market and make more money on it. You know, because that's the group that spends the most money.
Services, of course, Tim Cook keeps pointing to services. And really what Apple wants the press to think about is revenue per customer.
Yep.
And services is a big part of how they keep that revenue up. Because if you have an iPhone, they also mentioned installed base for the first time. They're really big on installed base.
They can't talk about sales numbers anymore because they stopped reporting those. And they also don't want to because they look bad.
It's not that they can't.
But the install base looks good and continues to grow.
900 million
iPhones, which means get ready for that press release in a year or two where they announce a billion iPhones in use.
That's inactive use.
Inactive use, yeah.
And Cook pointed out, or maybe it was Luca, pointed out that we're seeing hand-me-downs, that people buy a new iPhone, but they don't take the old one out of service. It gets handed down.
My kids have my old ones.
Yeah, and I think that's the case. My kid has my 10. Services up again. This is the four-quarter average, not the quarterly average.
Yeah, but that's a chart. I made a new chart that's going to debut later, which is the which is that year-over-year growth for services. And it's hilarious because all of the others, you've got to plot it with the chart in the center because some quarters are down and some quarters are up. The services chart just goes up.
You can start at zero.
It just goes up. It keeps going up. It's a huge part of their business. It is now bigger than their Mac and iPad business. And
it's a very, that's a nice curve,
isn't
too.
It? I mean, it's smoothed out by the average, but like it just, they go up every single quarter. And
$10.4 billion for this year.
This is part of their strategy.
But
now,
I have to point out, a good chunk of that comes from Google, right?
I don't know if that counts in services. You mean the, like the search revenue? It's possible.
Google gives them billions.
I think
billions.
A huge chunk
in fact,
of it
was,
is App Store revenue, right? Because the App Store is such a huge revenue generator. And then they give 70% of it back.
Looking at this, and then the claim was that Google last year gave them $9 billion for to be the default search engine in Safari.
Well, $2
billion. And this year was $12
billion.
So it can't,
yeah, it can't
be in this
there.
Number.
No.
Because this number is only 10.
That is probably amortized across the product lines, right? That probably goes into like it's part of the iPhone revenue or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, still, they made almost $11 million in services.
$10.9
And this is why
dollars.
They're going to come out with a video service this year and a news reading service this year and who knows what else they're going to do because they want to, you know, these valuable customers, like Alex said, they want to be able to provide things that go beyond the hardware. And, you know, that leads Apple into a pretty weird place, I think you could argue. But it also sort of is the nature of the tech industry today, I think.
And we've never had, and this could be scary and it could be good, but we've never had one organization handling distribution for movies, music, print, all going through the same pipeline. The opportunities to intermingle those things, so having really interesting media-rich products in the texture platform that happen to tie into the movie platform, that happen to tie into the to the podcast radio platform. All of those things, no one's, because it's always been disparate organizations that don't really understand what they're doing. They just don't, that doesn't happen. You know, they don't, the movie industry doesn't understand the print industry. The print industry doesn't understand the movie industry. There's all this back and forth. And I think that there's going to be a really interesting opportunity where we start to see that, tie in much tighter, between those platforms where, you know, and I think that
especially because next month we're going to hear about Apple's streaming service, whatever that is.
I think the services are getting so complex now that I am starting to believe that there will be some sort of bundle, some sort of Amazon Prime equivalent for Apple services.
What would you include in that bundle?
Oh, I mean, I think the news service is a good example, the texture thing.
Which is magazines, so news and magazines.
Apple Music, video.
TV, Apple Music.
iCloud
shows,
backup movies, storage.
But I think scary version is Apple doesn't change your Apple Music cost, and they put the movies and the print into it. And that is the version that everyone would, if it doesn't scare them to death,
Google did that. Google did that. The Google Music, they just said, okay, we're going to throw in YouTube Red, and now it's YouTube Premium, as part of your subscription. I think that's a smart strategy, and I could see Apple doing it.
But adding the magazines and adding the other bits and pieces.
That's a lot more.
I think the challenge is Apple's spending $1 billion a year probably on video content. They want that money back somewhere. And that's the question, is like just adding it to Apple Music and giving it free.
They can deficit for a while.
It's not giving it for free. It is saying that we're going to have
it's increasing the value of Apple Music, but you've got a lot of existing Apple Music subscribers. We'll see. I'm a little bit skeptical of that. It certainly would be simple
if you got
to do it.
100 million users paying, let's say, $10 a month is still $1 billion a month. You know, of revenue. You know,
Prime can do this because they have a revenue generator kind of underneath it, which, as long as you're a Prime member, you're going to buy more stuff from Amazon, so we're going to make more money. What could Apple do with a bundle that would give them incremental income on top of the services they're selling in the bundle? Maybe sell more iPads, Apple phones, Macs. I don't know. What's the underlying revenue growth there?
I still think that Apple is in a perfect position to become a bank. No, I'm not.
Apple Pay.
Apple Pay is part of the services revenue.
That's the service the gift that keeps on giving.
I now, anytime someone lets me do Apple Pay, I now use Apple Pay because now I can change my credit card anytime I want.
But not just at merchants, but peer-to-peer Apple Pay. I give you money. That's a huge revenue opportunity.
And if you look at a company that has that much cash, that could actually, the only reason they'd want to take your money for savings is to loan money to other people buying their products. It is a completely closed cycle.
That's interesting.
It is, and Apple's the only company in the world that could do that.
And I think ultimately the story is going to be just that it is the Apple ecosystem. And so we can simplify it for you. You pay us, you get everything.
Just buy everything.
And what that means is that people who are right now kind of like, I'll pick and choose. I'll have Spotify over here. It's like, no, you're just going to be all in on Apple. And that their advantage is going to be that people are not going to choose the competition because it's just a better deal to get it all from
messages.
Apple. And they're already in there.
I mean, if you look at the number of people that use iPhones, and then you look at how many, you know, it's 38 million or 40 million B of A customers. You know, Apple wouldn't have to play very hard, and people will say, well, they don't want to deal with the regulations. Well, they're dealing with a lot of regulations for health. I mean, you know, the health is more complicated than banking regulations, so they're not afraid of doing that, because the reason you do some things is not because it's easy, but because it's hard, because it makes it very hard for everyone else to follow. You know, and Apple has the wherewithal to weather that regulation storm in a way that other companies just wouldn't be able to do it. And I think that health, banking, those are the reasons that you get really serious about privacy.
I always look at Mac revenue, because I'm just that kind of guy. And I have to say, this is the biggest quarterly Mac revenue ever.
It is the biggest Mac quarter ever in terms of overall revenue.
That's mind-boggling.
It's pretty good. And Apple says that it's the most install base, I think, for iPad and Mac ever.
The funny thing is
that lost in the iPhone loss, which is understandable because it's almost two-thirds of their business, is the fact that the Mac and the iPad had really good quarters. It's not surprising when you think about the fact that we got the Mac
products.
Mini.
They had new products.
Right? It's like, yeah, imagine that. You release new products that people want to buy, and they're going to give you money for them. But it is the best iPad year-over-year quarterly growth in six
17%.
Years, they said.
But it was a dramatically enormous. Better iPad. I mean, I think that was the thing. I mean,
and pent-up demand for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Mac Mini.
A $329 iPad.
The Mac Mini, well, the revenue numbers, right? That's the revenue numbers are aided by the $1,000 iPad and the $799 iPad. But the Mac Mini and the MacBook Air, too, which, you know, a lot of people rolled their eyes at and said, oh, who cares about those products? But, like, it mattered. There was a lot of pent-up demand for those products, and the Mac sales show it.
Is there any graph you're particularly fond of that I haven't
shown? They're all just, you know, colorful bar charts. I don't know. Okay, let's talk about wearable home accessories, only because Apple did a little magic trick, which is this used to be called Other Products, and they've decided to rebrand as...
But there's nothing different in it. It's the exact same set of numbers.
But it's,
so
you know,
it's the watch, it's the AirPods, it's the
exactly.
Hub.
Exactly. But they've decided to market it a little bit instead of calling it Other.
Well, and that's also more accurate.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
it is,
what it is.
Right. AirPods and the watch especially, but also like cases and stuff like
also
that.
Also a record there. Quarter. This is the fourth quarter average.
But that is the record.
Yeah. $7.3 billion in revenue.
So all other aspects of their business are actually doing extremely well.
And I don't think next year you do a new iPhone, it'll show up like this, right?
Possibly.
Like a very different.
If they do improve, you know, whether it's in 19 or in 20, that'll happen. But I think that the what's interesting, I don't think it's a coincidence, because I think Apple has known, they started talking about services 4 years ago. Apple has known for a long time that the smartphone era of explosive growth is over.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how do we keep growing the company? What else can we do? I don't think it's an accident at all that all of these other product lines are showing really good signs right now. That's one of the ways they counterbalance
as much as they can, the
fact that the iPhone sales, again, are not crashing, but they're not going to be going up.
Well, the up was not from the U.S. market. It was from China, you know.
Not for a long time.
Yeah. And so... what they got surprised in the last quarter was that China cooled off so quickly.
Yeah,
they could see it happening.
If you look at the regional year-over-year growth, China plummeting. If you look at the regional four-quarter average, China going down.
Yeah.
While America's goes up.
China looped above Europe for a while and is now China revenues back below Europe. Because Apple has definitely had a challenge in China.
I'll show you with iPhone. Tim Cook's favorite chart. I'll show you right here. This is total Apple
profit,
$20 billion in 3 months.
Just walk away with $20 billion.
That's almost double what Google made in three months.
Again, you know, Apple doesn't need a GoFundMe. They're going to be fine.
Gonna be fine, kids. Fine. That's that would be my favorite chart. 20 billion. This is profit.
Well, I love the press that talks about the end of Apple. You know, like yeah, they're doing okay. I mean, if they just coasted for the next decade, well, they would still be making more than almost everybody else.
That's the big thing about this, and I know Andy and I have talked about this a lot, this idea that one of Apple's greatest threats is its success, because it's true. It could do nothing, literally nothing, for about 40 years and right. still pay everybody, right? Right? So the challenge is how, if you're Tim Cook, I mean, that's why he has one of the hardest jobs, I would say, in the tech industry, because he has to figure out how to have Apple keep what makes Apple unique while also making it a very different company than when Steve Jobs was in charge of it already, just in terms of scale. Mm-hmm. And how do you manage that? How do you navigate having this world where the services is a big part of the mix? It's hard because they have huge resources and they have to choose what to do with them and what path to walk. And it's a good problem to have, to make $20 billion in a quarter. But still, you know, who are they now? And because they aren't the old Apple, they kind of can't be at the scale they are.
Okay, yeah, we buried the lead once again. The most important story of the week, Emoji 12.0 have been announced. 59 new emojis, 75 if you include gender variation, 230 when you include all the skin tone options, starting with the yawning emoji. And then I don't know what we're going to characterize this emoji as.
It's a little
bitty emoji. It's a fingers showing size. Just keep that away from the eggplant emoji and you'll be okay. I like this one, hearing aid emoji.
I don't know when I would use it, though.
What? I can't hear you. What? I don't know. It's also not obvious what it is if you've never worn or known anybody with a hearing aid. It's not clear what's wrong with his ear. What is she doing? There's a person waving her finger at you. Oh, I know. That's the Virgin America no smoking finger wave.
She's deaf.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that goes with the hearing aid. Okay, so they're tapping their ear. Okay, see, that just shows you how emojis are not immediately obvious. But if you're used to ASL, right, that would be, I'm deaf. Okay, I get it. Sorry.
Is that ASL or is that a universal sign? I don't know, because the different sign languages have different signs, too. I don't know. I imagine that Jeremy at Emojipedia will explain all.
He'll explain, and we'll have Jeremy on, I'm sure.
About the cultural background
of
all
of
these signs.
A lot of this was for people of differing abilities. Here's a prosthetic limb, an arm, and a leg. People in chairs, and by the way, motorized and unmotorized. Nice to have the distinction there. Here is somebody with a cane. What's the deal with these people? I don't know. They have their hair disabled? What is the... I don't know. Here's somebody kneeling. Is that a yoga position? Sometimes I wonder, what is new about these? I don't get it. What's new about those people standing? Do they never have that before? Now they have people standing... And you can mix and match both genders and colors as they hold hands. Very, very wonderful. Inclusive.
Yes, standing, kneeling.
Standing and kneeling. Okay. We didn't have that before?
Nope.
Okay. We've had holding hands for some time.
We have a sloth.
New animals.
Maybe they're the ones that work better when they've placed next to other emojis, like a campfire.
That's it. And now we have, for your delectation, the new icons, and these are seeing eye dogs, two different kinds,
service
or maybe,
dogs.
Oh, wait a minute.
Service animals, yeah.
One's a service animal, one's a seeing eye dog. Okay, got it. A flamingo on one leg. Okay, now you're going to have to help me with your animal lore. Is that a lemur or a sloth?
It's a sloth.
That's in the sea otter, right?
Yeah. Still no honey badger.
Orangutan.
Still no honey badger. Skunk, I know. A waffle with butter by itself. Something that supposedly is baked potatoes, but that's disgusting. I don't know what
that
is.
I thought that was a coconut. Yeah.
What is that? I don't know. Maybe it's a coconut. Maybe it's a baked potato.
That's bagel game.
Garlic.
Right there.
Garlic. These are the official reference emojis from
Unicode
Apple Consortium.
We haven't seen the apples yet.
I don't think these are official. I think these are Emojipedia commissions and artists to do these as references. I think.
Unicode Consortium just does words,
Jeremy's
right?
Jeremy's on the committee, but I think Unicode Consortium just does like those patent illustrations, does like little outlines and words.
Oh, okay.
And then Jeremy Burge is the one who commissions art.
These are Jeremy's emoji.
This is the thing that's not widely known, is that there is no reference emoji per se in terms of the art. There's kind of emoji fragmentation. All of the major vendors are on the emoji committee, so yeah. I think they're all converging,
yeah.
but they all have to do their own art. And yeah, Jeremy pays an artist to make the Emojipedia version because he knows people are interested in this, and we won't see this until October probably on iOS, and sometime
this
midsummer for Android.
Yeah,
and I'm really unhappy with the garlic. I think that
the garlic.
Now's your
opportunity. This is Jeremy. Jeremy. So yeah. Jeremy, I'm sorry, but would you look that up? Is that a potato or a coconut? What is that? There's an onion.
Andy's
there's a juice box. I love this Herba Mate cup, which will only be recognized in some South American countries.
Yeah.
But I have a Paraguayan Herba Mate cup. That looks just like that.
I don't even know what's next to it.
A pearl and an oyster.
Oh, a pearl and an oyster, okay.
Or a loogie. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I looked at it. I was like, I have no idea what I'm looking at.
Guy in a parachute. Tidy whities. A safety coat.
That's a falafel.
That's a falafel.
A falafel.
Neither an eggplant.
I didn't recognize it out of its pita. Coming.
Yeah, without a pita, I don't know. That's a falafel.
That's or some hummus.
A falafel.
And is this a sari? Toe shoes, a snorkel and mask, bathing suits for men and women. Angkor Wat gets its own
Hindu temple.
Indian temple.
Hindu.
Hindu temples, not Angkor Wat. There's a cane, wheelchairs of two different varieties, stethoscope. What is that?
Blood.
Drop of blood and a Band-Aid to go with the hypodermic.
Oh. Huh. Yeah.
Finally,
you donate some blood. You can use your blood emoji.
Straight edge razor. Wow. I think that may be a controversial one.
And the axe.
As with the axe,
it's just razor.
So, razor.
Companies are free to use their own.
And then this one is called the Lizzie Borden, right? The
yeah,
axe.
Exactly.
We've got a kite. We've got a yo-yo, a chair, and finally, ladies and gentlemen, a banjo. We've needed that for so long.
Long last.
A sweaty ice cube, I guess. I don't know. What is this next one here? Is that a candle? Lamp?
It's like an olive oil lamp.
Saturn?
Golf cart? Do we have Jupiter right now? Or
I think
Saturn?
I'd be... if I were in the Mars contingent, I'd be very
upset. I wonder
obsessed.
If that's a planet emoji.
It's probably a planet, yeah.
I know, but...
That is a ringed planet.
Ringed?
Oh,
nice.
How many ringed planets are there?
No, there's Saturn.
In this particular solar system.
Well, there's Neptune, the one big one that you've heard of.
are there some unknown ringed planets?
Well, I mean, Jupiter, Uranus, and Neptune all have rings.
But you just can't see them?
Yeah,
do we have rings?
No,
we got a ring too.
We don't. That's a lie. Don't believe it. Don't believe the ring. The ring
did
people.
Do you know that the rings are a relatively late phenomenon?
Yes.
That's wild. I thought, oh, that must be millions of years old. No, it was like 2004 or something.
Interesting.
The lamp is a Dia lamp.
A Dia lamp.
It's another Hindu.
A Dia lamp. Okay. A white heart and a copper heart to go with the red, white, mm-hmm. and blue hearts. And are these emoji or just colors?
Those are color, orange circle, yellow circle, green circle.
Oh.
Yeah, just okay. More shapes with colors.
Shapes with colors. Your favorites in here, guys? You got one that you really like? You're going to be using a lot? I think the waffle for me is something I'm going to find many, many uses for a waffle.
I think the razor has Sweeney Todd.
There's a very Sweeney Todd, yeah. Especially combined with the blood drop. I think you could really have some fun.
Yeah.
Next up, next to a pie and a blood drop next to a
banjo.
Oh,
I'm going to be using the little
itty bitty, yeah. Just a little.
Just a little. It's called the What is the. Okay, now, Carson, what are the names? What's the name of that? You're looking at the text description. What is the name of that?
I think that'll be the next time.
It's known as pinching hand, light skin tone, medium light skin tone.
Is that a yawning guy?
Are you mad? In context, it's someone asks, are you mad? And then
face.
You send that back.
Just a little. Yawning face. Okay.
So I realize that people, you know, there were probably listeners who were like, why are they talking about emoji? But because I always hear from those people, the emoji curmudgeons. But like,
don't be emoji curmudgeon.
People use it. It's expressive. It is the solution to the thing, you know. We've been online, all of us, for a long time now, and one of the things you find when you go online is that text doesn't do it, right? Like text, it's really easy to be misinterpreted with text. And emoji really has kind of found this place where it's more expressive. So much easier to communicate.
It's a language. We started with emoji, and then we went to text, and now we're going back to emoji. You know, like, I look at my daughter will send me this long string of emojis, and I'm like, it looks like hieroglyphics. You know, like, it's just like a whole, you know, there's a whole little process there.
Some rejects the why you know fingers together. Why you know... Apparently, and kissy chef. These are much requested.
Chef's kiss is not.
You have to give Apple some credit for the people of disabilities emojis. Mm-hmm. That was a big push from Apple. Flamingo, sloth, triceratops, and dog faces were requested. And for some reason, the white heart, which did in fact get in there, was highly requested. No Wi-Fi symbol. These are the already approved ones. So there you go.
Badger.
Where's our badger?
Didn't make it.
Didn't make it. A campaign.
Oh, no, the badger's been approved, ladies and gentlemen. But it's not a honey badger. It's just a badger badger.
You just put the beehive emoji in the badger together. You can make it.
That's really part of the fun of emojis is the creative.
Making a rebus, sure.
Creative emoji rebus. Wow. Okay, have we covered this to your satisfaction?
Ad nauseum.
And beyond.
Well beyond. Let me just quickly look at the... Apple says they're storing some Russia data on Russian servers, just as they do in China. That's by government demand, request, and law. And that's what you're going to see in every country that demands that.
I think so.
Apple has reached a deal with France to pay a half billion euro fine. Mm.
I mentioned that earlier.
In back taxes. We didn't mention it in the show, though. I think I mentioned it before the show. If I did, I apologize if I've already said that. Did you do the Apple Heart Month activity challenge on your watch?
No.
Me neither.
No. I will admit, though, that I find myself each day trying to figure out how I'm going to close my rings.
It does work.
Like I'm just like, oh, you get a little bit more. I'll do
notification
this.
At 11:45 p.m. You just want just a mile and a half walk and close that ring. Mm-hmm. I'm going to run out that door.
I don't go that far.
Okay,
that's a little over the top.
Apple Music is free now on American flights.
Yeah, and I would imagine they're going to preload all their video originals on there too, right? When those come out,
I imagine every airline will jump on that bandwagon. Right?
This is the way of marketing now.
Very smart.
Netflix has a similar deal with somebody.
You have to subscribe to Apple Music to be able to listen. I bet you do.
I don't think you do. No, I think they have curated playlists that you can listen to without being a subscriber.
Yeah. Apple Music subscribers.
Oh, okay.
Can stream over 50 million songs, but I bet you're right that if you're a non-subscriber,
there's like some curated playlist, something like that. But the idea is that, if you are a customer, you can use the plain Wi-Fi to listen to that
without paying for plain Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I think that actually is great. It actually does make me, it does two things. Either make me want to fly American or have an Apple Music subscription. I already have the Apple Music subscription.
If I just load all my songs all the time, any playlist, I'm just like,
sure. I know. Isn't that a pain? Your Beats One global live streamer curated playlists as well. So that's, I think, for people who are not members. Mm. Yeah, because you get Beats One if you're not a member, right?
This is what I meant by Apple's not the same company it used to be. They're making online airline content deals from online to airline now.
They've never really talked about the numbers and how many people listen to Beats One, but I bet you it's a really large number. We don't think... The guys used to listen to it in the shop.
Radio station.
Yeah.
And Tanuga and Zane Zach Lowe and all those people.
Yeah. And I bet you that number, though, is big compared to radio stations.
Sure.
You know, like when you think of a regular terrestrial radio station and you're in the LA or New York market and you might have 10 million or 5 million or whatever the cum is, I bet you the number is much bigger than that.
JP Morgan says. A bank analyst note that Apple should take its $250 billion in cash and buy Netflix.
Disney.
JP Morgan, thank you for the suggestion.
Because the most important thing to do when you have a big, big pile of cash is to spend all of it.
Spend it so you can make more.
What's
Netflix's
value?
Spend it on a company that has gone into a large amount of debt in order to get market share.
Don't do it.
By buying content, the business that you are also now buying content in.
I think we're in agreement that Apple should not buy Netflix.
Yeah, no. I mean, they could, but I think...
They could buy an island nation.
They could.
They could
They could.
There's a lot of that things they work. Could buy. I think Canada would be less than that, but they shouldn't.
Probably not.
Stay away. You think that should buy Netflix?
Disney.
No.
Oh, that's all we need.
Disney's more than $200 billion. $250 billion.
I like the eye rolls that Andy is doing. Like I can feel them all the way across the country.
It's just that they're not creative stewards of the things that they buy. Disney, yeah. They always go for the most commercial thing they can possibly go for, as opposed to something like Netflix or Hulu or one of these streaming services that needs to have a certain amount of character to it. Has to do some things that are really kind of out of the – not only have the hits, but also has to get some things that are sort of out of the normal realm of what most people are looking for, because there's going to be that 10% of everybody that's looking for something that they've never heard of before. And I think it would be dangerous if Disney were to buy it and plug Netflix into its
– No, I'm not talking about Disney buying Netflix. I'm talking about Apple buying Disney.
Apple, no, we just looked at Disney's market cap. For $85 billion, Apple could buy 51% of Disney. Just take it over.
I mean, the thing is that there's so many crossovers for Apple when it comes to experience at Disneyland and Disney World and AR and tying in all the stuff and using it as a big, you know, there's all the Disney characters they could be using for things. Then there's just buffing up the content.
What would they do with it? It's really hard to get that
IP otherwise.
Star Wars and Marvel. A reconceptualization of what Apple is beyond even what we've talked about today, right? Which I can't say it's not possible, because I feel like with Amazon and Google and Apple, these companies are so enormous that who's to say that they won't continue swallowing other companies?
Spotify's buying Gimlet for $200 million. I'd sell Twit for $100 million. No problem.
Apple could buy Disney if they were to decide that they don't care about being a technology company or a design company anymore. If they wanted to redefine themselves as sort of a 3M, just we are a company that buys other companies, and
they can do so
we don't
Disney,
we don't actually
though.
Make I mean, anything. That's not the character of Apple. I don't think they would give half a damn about owning Disney.
I think we all agree that the JP Morgan analyst is full of it, though.
Yeah.
Is he talking about?
This is famous last words, though. We're going to come back to this in 6 months when Apple owns Netflix, and we'll be like,
No, I know. I was the one who said Apple will never buy Beats. What is that? That's crazy. That's a false rumor, which was immediately debunked like 3 minutes after I said it. All right, let's take a final break, and then if you would, I think Jason has a rather elaborate pick of the week. Oh, do you want to mention this?
We just breaking news. Angela Ahrens, the Apple retail chief, is leaving. Whoa. Apparently.
I misunderstood the import of that press release. They've got a new executive in charge of retail and people,
right, Deirdre O'Brien.
But I didn't understand she was, oh my goodness, replacing Angela Ahrens.
Yeah.
That is a big deal.
Well, it's 5 years Angela Ahrens has been at Apple Retail.
Just long enough
after
to best.
Being CEO of Burberry, but she's leaving and they have a new...
And it was only in October that Angela Ahrens appeared on stage in a fine Burberry coat.
You know, she has been the best dressed person on stage at Apple events ever. And I will miss that because...
This has to be a surprise high for style. Apple, right?
I don't know.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if, like, as part of her tenure, she took it upon herself to, like, dress the other people on stage... By saying, you know, maybe you could, like, I don't know, you're the CEO of a big company, just dress up a little bit.
Like Deirdre O'Brien is an in-house promotion. She's been at Apple for 30 years.
Yeah, and was the head of what they call people, which is because HR. It was personnel, then it was HR, now it's people, but that also includes things like Apple University. And, of course, it seems weird. It is also true, though, that the vast majority of Apple's employees are retail employees. So, you know, they have a lot of
But I do have to wonder if this is a temporary appointment until they can find somebody with the kind of retail. You know, they had a very bad experience prior to Angela Ahrens with Tom Johnson, who came from JCPenney. He wasn't a good match.
Ron Johnson started it, and he was good. It was the guy from the reseller in the UK.
Dixon's.
Yeah. That guy was a disaster, bad fit, didn't fit, and he was out of there. Right. And then they went to Angela Ahrens, who gave up a CEO job. It was always kind of a fascinating choice, right? She gave up a job as CEO. CEO of Burberry.
Well, she got paid a lot more at Apple.
In order to come to Apple. Yeah, but still, you're going from being a CEO to not.
Running the show to answering to nobody.
I wonder if that's big Big Fish in Little Pond versus Little Fish in Really Big Pond.
Well, we'll see where she goes next, right? But I think maybe she said, I'll give you 5 years. Maybe
Apple
that was
says
the,
it's
the whole
for
story.
Personal and professional reasons. Yeah. Tim Cook said, I want to thank Angela for inspiring and energizing our teams over the past 5 years. She's been a positive, transformative force for both Apple stores and the communities they serve. We wish her the very best as she begins a new chapter. Arendt said, the last 5 years have been the most stimulating, challenging, and fulfilling of my career. Through the team's collective efforts, retail has never been stronger, I would agree, or better positioned.
Yeah, and she had to clean up the mess that was made by the previous guy.
And I would say that you feel like the retail has been, under her guidance, has been hitting on all cylinders. I mean, the stores get more and more interesting, and it's a better experience. So I think she's done a good job.
Absolutely. And I do wonder what's next for Angela Arendt. But that's a breaking news, just came in an Apple press release. Arendt is leaving in April, just a few months from now, after 5 years at Apple. Let us pause to think about what that means and prepare our picks of the week. And I will talk a little bit about where I hang my hat on the web, and that's WordPress.com. Such a big fan of WordPress.com. So many big publications use WordPress.com. Maybe people don't know that. Quartz, Fortune. I just saw another site I was reading that is based on WordPress.com. I can't remember the name, but actually it could be almost anybody, because 33% of the entire web, 33% of the entire web is on WordPress. That's a pretty astounding statistic, because WordPress is great. I mean, there's nothing you can't do with WordPress, e-commerce, publishing, or just your own personal blog. If you're a business, if you're an individual, you need a place on the internet that's yours, a place where no one can, no one can say boo to you. No Mark Zuckerberg can say, we don't like what you're doing. Or, it's not enough to have a Facebook page. Yeah, you should have that for your business, or a Twitter feed. Yeah, you should have that. But you really need a place to link back to. That's your home on the web at WordPress.com. Great site building tools that will make your site look unique and match your aesthetic. They have thousands of themes. They do have a great team of WordPress experts to support you 24/7. WordPress.com lets anyone pursue whatever it is they love by launching a site that's free to start and has room to grow. No two-week trials, no hidden fees. With WordPress, you own your own content forever. You can upload images, videos, text, of course, photos, and download them too at any time. And it will grow with you no matter where you want to be. I actually started with the free tier 12 years ago, worked my way up. Now I have a business plan, and I just love it. I just love it. WordPress.com. Right now, you can go to WordPress.com/MacBreak and get 15% off any new plan purchase. 15% off at WordPress.com/MacBreak. 33% of the internet runs on WordPress, shouldn't you? LeoLaporte.com is my WordPress site. WordPress.com site. Take a look at it. WordPress.com/MacBreak. I'm going to take a chance. Oh, I bet you're running on the other guy. Six colors.
Could be, yes. Could be. I'm running on obsolete software that is not, I don't recommend to anybody. Use what I'm using.
WordPress.com has a home for you,
That's
too.
That's what I hear.
You have a whole setup here, so I'm going to let Jason start with his pick of the week. What is
All
this?
Right. I have two. I mean, the first one is the... hello, everybody.
It looks like you're having a dental procedure at this point.
It's something called the Luna Display, which is not here, which is just... and I should disclaimer, they're a sponsor of some of my podcasts, but I actually bought on their Kickstarter before they were ever a sponsor. What I find fascinating about this product, if you haven't heard about it, is it's from the same people who have done a bunch of other things involving using your Mac as a kind of graphics tablet via the iPad, and they built some great tools for it.
I use Duet to do this. How is this different?
So this is interesting because there's a hardware component. You plug it into either a DisplayPort or a USB-C port. But what has happened since the Mac Mini was released is that a lot of people who love their iPad but also use a Mac have bought a Mac Mini and plugged one of these things in, and then anywhere in their house they can get a very low latency, very high quality Mac image on their iPad.
So what is the range on this?
If it's on your local Wi-Fi network, it works. You can't take it out of the network. So it doesn't have to be...
That's so cool. So I could do it anywhere in the house.
You can do it anywhere in the house. Okay, it doesn't do I'm a sold. Software keyboard, so I still have Screens, which is the app I use for remote access, and I use that if I need to type on a software keyboard. But if you've got a hardware keyboard, if you've got that keyboard that comes with the iPad Pro, people are starting to use this product for what it was not intended for, which is as kind of like turning your Mac, a Mac Mini is a good example, into kind of a headless Mac, and then you just use your iPad.
Pro.
Yeah. Which it really works. I'll do things like AirDrop myself things where I'll turn on AirDrop and drag a file in and then hold my iPad kind of near the Mac Mini and the file comes over. And anyway, it is, so full disclosure, they have sponsored some of my podcasts.
I'm intrigued.
But I bought one before that, and I think it's fascinating that a lot of people who are really into the iPad now still need access to the Mac and are kind of using this as their Mac access point is via this sort of screen control, remote control. And you just touch the screen to interact with the interface. So if you want to pull down a menu, you
suddenly the
just
Mac is a touch.
Touch the menu.
A touch interface.
You mean the Mac interface actually works
on
with touch?
On a touch screen is shocking. Use the Apple Pencil with it. The other product and the one that I brought with me is this is a stand from a company called Clear Look, which I had never heard before I bought this stand. They sell it on Amazon. I am always pursuing new iPad stands because I enjoy using an external mechanical keyboard with my iPad.
This is a very expensive segment.
I stand up oftentimes at the bar in my kitchen and write articles.
I love this stand.
It is rotatable. So, of course, you can write articles. I love writing articles in vertical mode instead of horizontal. It's very nice. But if you're using a side-by-side multitasking, you can do it in horizontal as well. You just turn it. It tilts. But I've written about a couple stands like this. What makes this stand different and why my friend Mike Hurley recommended it to me is it is 18 inches of height that you can get. So many iPad stands are so low down. It's very stable because there's a kind of a heavy base. And this is the 12.9 iPad Pro that I'm using here. So many of them are so low that you can use them, but you end up kind of hunched over and it's no good. And this one you can get up at a good ergonomic height and use it, and I use it all the time. Also, I've got this Leopold.
I just bought two of them.
I got this Leopold mechanical keyboard
me, one
here.
For Lisa.
One of the unstated things that
which
that,
kind is this?
This is a Leopold FC660.
I like its name.
It's a little mini keyboard. But one of the nice things that I hadn't really thought about before about the new iPad Pro is USB-C. It doesn't do a lot of things in terms of storage and all of that. It has enough power coming out of that port now that pretty much any USB device that's bus powered will work with it, including every keyboard I own. So this, I don't have to do anything. I can just plug this in. I'm using a dongle here to do it, and it works great. It works just fine. So this is my setup home when I want to take a break from my iMac. I just use this ClearLook stand and the big
and it's hardwired connected, which is awesome.
Yeah, you can use a Bluetooth keyboard if you want, but this is it's harder to find good mechanical Bluetooth keyboards. Yeah. And I have a bunch of these USB ones laying around, so use those.
Do those stands break down well?
This one, well, I mean, it's going to have
He means, can I put it in my suitcase?
Yeah, yeah. It's this one doesn't. You can unscrew it. You could actually take the base off of it, so you could do that.
Cool.
Yeah,
I'm going to get these Leopolds too. These are we were talking about the Code keyboards and the DOS keyboard, and this is a pretty nice.
I'm using a different mechanical keyboard at my Mac now. This is my old one, so I've kind of repurposed it to the iPad.
Yeah,
there are a bunch of good mechanical keyboards
lying
out there.
Around,
yeah.
Though. Yeah, so
yeah, it's a problem.
it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, Cherry Brown is my choice.
I might use my IBM keyboard.
There is nothing like using an old style clicky keyboard with an iPad.
You practically have to raise your arm to type with it. You know,
it is amazing.
It's such key travel. Very nice. Okay, I just bought a lot of stuff I shouldn't.
You're welcome.
I think you just bought. I just made me buy a Mac Mini. That's the thing that's really really scary. Because now I'm thinking, I want to use a Mac Mini.
Well, you could use
anywhere
it, I mean,
in the house.
You can use it with any Mac. You know.
I guess I could use. I already have an iMac Pro.
Yeah.
Could I plug into the back of that?
Yeah, the challenge there is that screen is so much larger than your iPad screen that it's going to have to be scaled down.
Oh, what the heck? How big a screen does the Luna display support? Any size?
Well, any size. So that 12.9 iPad Pro will do a wonderful job.
Hey, maybe I'll just get one of these and see how well it works on the iMac.
Yeah, give it a try. It's a very clever thing because what they're doing is they're fooling the, unlike a lot of the software solutions, the hardware dongle basically fools the Mac into thinking that it's got an external monitor attached and that turns on all the hardware acceleration, which is why it works better.
Right.
All right. I broke Leo.
You can use it with mini display port too if you had a really old Mac line around.
Yes, I tried that with my MacBook Air and it did not want to go into
not
Retina
a good
mode.
Choice.
Shocker.
Not a good
it
choice.
But it did work.
Oh, this is I'm buying one. Okay. So that's $180 you cost me.
All right, you're welcome.
All right. I better go to Andy because I know he's gonna have something inexpensive, like Coca-Cola or something.
Yeah, I do have something cheap. This is actually not unrelated to the iPad. A lot of people, like especially artists that I know, they love the Apple Pencil. They love the art tools on the iPad. What they don't like is drawing on a sheet of like slick glass. And a friend of mine who is a professional artist, Chris Eliopoulos, as a matter of fact, he has a brand new book out today in a series of kids' books called Ordinary People Change the World. He drew the book I Am Billie Jean. Gene King, which is being released today, tells her story.
How many times have I said that?
Yep. and he's drawn all these books in the series, but basically to communicate that this is not just like someone like me who just doodles for fun. He started recommending this screen cover called Paper Like that he says absolutely just makes it really, really helps out. It really makes the surface of the iPad underneath the Apple Pencil feel like he's drawing on paper again. And he absolutely loves them. And you get two for something like $33. I assume like most screen covers, yes, it's two, but they give you two because they assume you're going to screw up one when you try to apply it. But it does give you like all the stuff that you need to like actually apply the thing correctly. And so I feel what he's saying. It's like there are a lot of people I know, like myself included, that I love these tools, but there's something about like the texture feedback of like a pencil against paper that have something with a little bit of grit, a little bit of teeth to it has got to really, really help. And for $33 for a pack of two, it's got to be, if nothing else, it'll keep the glare off your screen. It'll protect your screen a little bit. And it has the thumb of endorsement of superstar artist Chris Eliopoulos. So what else do you want?
I've always thought that that Apple would eventually change the stylus just a little bit so that we would get more of that of that bite, but they never did. Or at least
give you like interchangeable tips for like different kind of feel.
Didn't they promise exactly interchangeable tips?
That's what it's there.
Well, they swappable just in
but
case
like
one
a different
wears
kind.
Out,
but I thought they promised different kinds.
I thought so too.
Does the Cintiq feel a little more like paper? Or some of the other Wacom? Okay. What do you have? That's a good pick. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
What do you have? I don't draw my iPad.
I have one of the best. I want to thank Aaron Mailer, I was texting back and forth, and he goes, oh, I just downloaded this. And he's like, holy smokes, it works. And so this is one of the best uses of AR I've seen in quite some time. And it's the new update to the Warby Parker. Have you seen this? The Warby Parker eyeglasses.
It.
So the biggest problem with Warby Parker is you're ordering all of these.
You have
to order
wait
a bunch of boxes
and get the set and try them on.
So they're now using your 3D camera on your iPhone to match your
it's
AR
and
glass
it works.
Try-on.
Look at this.
So it looks like your glasses. Oh, that's cool.
I can turn my head.
You're wearing glasses,
and it's like I can say and then you just go like this. Oh, I'd like to try a different pair of glasses, please. Oh,
that's a really good idea. I wish there was some way we could show that. You'd have to come over here. Here, give it to me. I can try them, right?
Yeah,
I can try them on. Let me see here. Let me see. Oh, that's a nice look for me. Yeah.
And then you just
swipe over. These are the Bensons. I look like Benson in these.
But the
do they have any? Oh, that's a good look. I think that's good. I look like an intellectual, right?
Yeah. But I mean,
or a defendant.
But the thing is it's taking advantage of really understanding where you're.
I take the fifth on that, Senator.
I didn't know. I don't remember. I want some Haskell glasses. Do they help me program? Those are nice. There's a guy named.
But if you turn your head a little bit, you're really going to see the tracking. I mean, it is.
Yeah, there's reflection, too. There's the
highlights off the top. Yeah,
It is really, really, really well done.
These make me look like Jerry Lewis. Nice. Yeah, so a good use of AR.
Yeah.
This is called their virtual try-on. Warby used to be a sponsor. They're not anymore, so I don't have to say that. Warby Parker. My problem is I have a giant head, and so most glasses kind of look too small on me. I hope this is not like stretching the glasses frame to make it look better.
Maybe, but I think that it they don't have to. They would be able to do it.
Also, I noticed that the temples of the frames don't actually plunge directly into your skull.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to know what it looks like over your ear. Or maybe you do. I don't know.
I'm sure that they had an issue with the tracking was not quite, you know, where the ears are going to be.
Does this make me
but
look
even
like...
even if you're going to get but three or four and check it, I think that you're...
It, this is great.
It would be... It's just
well,
really...
this is the Thurston. That's a good look.
But does it show you how good you look when you whip them off dramatically to make a point?
Exactly.
You can't.
But
try
it. Listen to me. Yeah, exactly. I am not going to take this anymore.
It's the
point,
Stanley.
Point, point.
Thurston wide. See, I need the Thurston wide. That's what I need.
Well, these now, does good. It help you? Does it will also show you what you would look like with contacts?
Very nice.
Yeah.
That's Warby Parker. And it's actually a really great glasses store by mail that are a lot less expensive because they're not owned by Luxottica.
Yeah.
And they're really good. Yeah. Yeah. My daughter is a Warby customer. Very cool.
I was committed to changing to Warby Parker specifically because I'm tired of going and paying incredible sums of money for
monopolistic prices for plastic.
Right. And so I kept on going, oh, I don't know which ones I want to order. And when this Kate, when Aaron sent this to me the other day or yesterday, I was just like, oh,
nice.
Now I'm done. So I'm going to.
Thank you,
so
Aaron.
Probably within the next couple of weeks, you'll see me with my new Warby.
Warby does do prescription sunglasses, Patrick. I have prescription Warbys that I wear and I love them. They also do monocles.
Oh.
Do they have a monocle try on? Because
I don't know.
I use my Warby monocle frequently.
I'm not even. That's it. I'm done.
I don't know if there's a pince-nez option, however. Mr.
It's just you.
What?
It's just you. You're the last
one. Mr. Jason Snell.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for bringing your dental equipment and
yes, you're welcome.
And all of the gear. That
We'd involved. Like to see you again in 6 months.
That's right. Remember to floss.
Always a pleasure. Sixcolors.com. You can see him anytime you want. He seems to file an awful lot.
Typing away on my loud, clacky keyboard.
All the time.
And
man, the guy has more podcasts.
Yes.
Than,
find my tech podcast at relay.fm and my other podcast at theincomparable.com.
Yeah. You still doing the Incomparable Theater?
David Lohr writes.
He's got to write the script.
It's up to him. He's in charge of it now. Yeah. I do. I've given that to him. It's good. All him.
You know the writer should. You know.
I like doing. Yeah, let the writer do the work.
The writer do the work.
I say.
Thank you, Jason. It's always a
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Really love having you on. Same with you, Mr. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core. Follow him on the Twitter at @AlexLindsay. Took the two of them to replace Renee Ritchie. Is Renee, he's in a tropical climb
somewhere. I think
somewhere.
So. Undisclosed.
Enjoying Mobile
emoji.
Nation's big bucks. Nice. And, of course, the one, the only, the inimitable Andy Inatko from Inatko.com and Boston Public Radio, WGBH Boston, host of the Material Podcast with Florence Ion, and also on Relay FM.
Yep.
Pretty much everybody doesn't work for me, works for Mike Early, right? That's pretty much how it works. Yeah.
Thank you,
Andrew.
We're trying to get a bidding wars happening, but up till now it hasn't worked yet.
I bid $200.
We are all available for purchase by Spotify.
I'll tell you what, Leo. I'll just take my Android podcast and go to Relay FM.
Oh!
That's a good idea. You should definitely do that. Don't!
Yeah,
you're supposed to say counteroffer.
I apologize. I didn't realize that was how it worked. I'm sorry, Andy. Don't ever threaten to take Mac Break Weekly somewhere else, though.
That would break my heart.
Break my heart. Hurley doesn't get this show. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Jason. Most importantly, thank you all for being here. We do this show every Tuesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. We have a live stream. Unlike all those other podcast networks, we have video. We were stupid enough to turn this into a TV station. So
you have to wear pants.
That's why you have to wear pants when you're on this show. Go to twit.tv/live. You can watch and listen, if you insist, to a live stream. And if you are on the live stream, you really ought to be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. That's all the other kids watching live, or at least a good portion thereof. As with those other guys, we also offer downloadable, I call it on demand, you might call it a podcast, at our website, twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly, twit.tv/MBW. And while you may be searching for some other show, Material or The Incomparable or on your podcast client. You could also search for Mac Break Weekly and subscribe to it. That way you'd get it each and every Tuesday the minute it's available, hot off the presses. And you would never lack for something fabulous to listen to, right? Right. Thanks for being here. But now I'm sorry to say it's time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye. Clicky, clicky, clicky. Clicky, clicky.